time.
Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Hello, this is Rob Russell with the Wildlife Pro Network. Today's date is the 11th of March, 2010. Tonight we'll be getting together with Dr. Amber Rosen. She'll be discussing bee acupuncture. I want to also point out that this Sunday night we're doing a podcast, a return podcast with Jerry Genesio, an author who wrote a book on wildlife diseases that typically affect campers and hikers and trappers and hunters and those who love outdoors but don't ever really think about it. Many of you may have heard the short exclusion that I did from the last podcast on rabies, but he'll be coming back, bringing us up to date on what's going on with the diseases as well as some of his own activities. It'd be a good night. He's a good subject matter expert on wildlife diseases, and I invite everybody to join us Sunday night at 8 p.m. We're going to start off with the show with Kay Ellis from AAL Animal Control of Detroit. She's going to share with us a program that involves some free telephone service that has a lot of value for just about anybody who uses phone and internet. And with that, Kay, how you doing?
Good. How you doing, Rob?
Real good.
Great.
You want to give me a short rundown?
And we can go more into that on Sunday night with the expert from the company. But what this is it's actually a T-Mobile network. The company's name is WOW Mobile. It's a new company that has popped up since September. And what it is it offers a T-Mobile service along with a lot of other new technology as well. The reason I got involved with this is because I own the company for AAL, and I was having a problem scheduling my guys on the road, my technicians. And what I was trying to find is a way to cut down on my accounting situation with money floating around, where my guys were, how to get credit card information on the road. And we were looking for a cheaper alternative. And what I came across was this company was that they have a phone through WOW Mobile. It's a Samsung Galaxy that has a network right within it, which is like a hotspot. So you can tether that phone right to your computer from anywhere you're at. So, if, for example, if you had this phone sitting in front of you and you put it on tether, four of you could use your computer right around you. Now, the kicker for all this is unlimited phone, unlimited phone text, and unlimited data transfer and internet. The 3G network, so it kind of solves the problem. Now, the best thing about this is when you refer three people to this service, your service is free. And you can go from there. But that's why we did it, is that I found a way rather than getting the $60 a month from Verizon plus paying for the Verizon cost or whatever, I can now use this phone that they can schedule from it. They can do everything they need to on a mobile phone and also connect to their internet as well, so we can connect to a server into the software for my company and do everything right out on the from the work for any of the customers right there, so we don't lose anything from a customer, for the monies, for scheduling, any of those things. I can see what's going on and run my business from here and know how to schedule my new appointments coming in. So it's really a cool way to do it and a really inexpensive way to do it, but the service is awesome. So that's why we're bringing this to you. And Hamish, who was supposed to be here tonight but we couldn't get through, is willing to talk everybody through it on Sunday night and explain exactly how it works. And that I've had great luck, and I'm on the internet right now from my phone that's running as fast as my Comcast, so I'm pretty happy.
Sounds great. Looking forward to Sunday night.
Okay, Sunday night is it, and we'll bring Hamish and show everybody how to do it.
Sounds great.
Okay.
Rob Overton?
Yes.
You ready to go?
All right, let's get going. First of all, I want to thank everybody that's on tonight and just give a brief what we have planned for next month. We have Janet Bryson from Country Roots Farm. A lot of people have probably seen their universal bottom screen boards that they sell. She'll be talking about the benefits of screen bottom boards. But more importantly, they paraffin dip their equipment. And I know on the Beamaster forums, there seems to be a lot of continuous interest in people dipping equipment in paraffin instead of painting it and whatnot. So that'll be very educational from that aspect as well. I also like to remind anyone that if they would like to be a guest or know someone that's a subject matter expert that they would like to have as a guest on the podcast, please contact me and we'll see what we can do. And also for those online, well, actually those that are capable of speaking on the phone today, if you have questions during today's podcast, please speak up and ask your questions. Those that don't have the voice option and are online, feel free to type your question on the online screen and we'll do our best to get the word out. With that, I'd like to talk briefly about our guest tonight, Dr. Amber Rose, author of Bee in Balance, A Guide to Healing the Whole Person with Honeybees, Oriental Medicine, and Common Sense. I first met Amber, probably 6-8 months ago. I went like a two-hour drive. I heard she was going to be at a local, semi-local bee club meeting talking. It was like a two-hour drive, and bee sting therapy was always something that I was intrigued by but didn't know much about. So I went to hear her speak and was totally sucked in by it. have been to a couple of her seminars since then. She's very passionate about it. She's, you know, a true caring and person that is really into it to help people and not into it for money or any other reason. I've been fortunate enough over a couple of her sessions she's had to be able to provide her bees, and I'm hoping to be more set up to do so over next winter. But some of you who have heard about bee sting therapy have probably heard of Charles Mraz from, I believe it was Maine or Vermont. Amber has worked close with him years ago, and she'll get into more about that. But ultimately, there's been a lot of people that I've seen in these sessions that has been stung and have seen tremendous results. So anyway, without any continuing on here so much, I would like to turn it over to Amber. She can continue to tell us the rest about herself, and we can get into the talk. And once again, if anybody has questions during the talk, please speak up, and I'm sure Amber will be glad to answer them. So,
absolutely.
Amber?
Absolutely. Okay. Well, I'm Amber Rose, and I'm going to be talking about bee acupuncture, which is living acupuncture. I'm an acupuncturist, obviously, and I'm combining my acupuncture skills with bee sting therapy. So in this particular case, the acupuncture is called living acupuncture, where the needle is still alive because it's still attached to the bee, now because it's the stinger. So can everybody hear me all right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yep.
I'm assuming so. All right, so let's just go down to Disney World for a minute, and I'm just going to tell you about a ride in Disney World where you can actually sit on a seat in the ride, and there's a doctor they show on a screen. The doctor is shrunk to a microscopic level and injected into the bloodstream of the patient. But the truth is, we really don't have to wait for medical science to catch up with Disney World, because inside each of us is an inner physician. We have our own doctor inside of us. And if we have a chronic illness or an autoimmune disease, that doctor has gone to sleep like Rip Van Winkle. So somehow we've got to go and wake up that doctor and say to that inner physician, heal thyself. So what we're really doing is we're manipulating the body to heal itself. And it kind of sounds like a magic trick, sort of like taking Humpty Dumpty that's sort of fallen apart and, you know, harnessing the power of honeybees to use honeybees as medicine. So the honeybees are going to be like our ruby red slippers from Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz. We're going to click our heels together, and we're going to be respectful of the bees. We're going to honor them and really revere them and know that they're, you know, we don't want them to become extinct on this planet so we can all survive. So we have respect for them, and we're also going to learn from them. And what we want to learn, first of all, is that aerodynamically bees are too heavy to fly, but they don't know it. So they flap their wings 11,000 times a minute, and they defy gravity. So now, if you want to take any of the honeybee products, whether it's honey or pollen or propolis or royal jelly or the venom, which is the main thing we're going to talk about tonight, we're really talking about taking and making a life force transplant. It's like, you know, you hear people talk about transplanting livers or hearts, but we're going to transplant life force, that energy where the bee is able to fly even though aerodynamically it's not allowed to. So in this case, really, God is the doctor or the bee is the doctor, and there's no laboratory involved. It's just you get stung on either on purpose or by accident, and somehow a healing starts to occur. Now, I can take questions at any point, so feel free to speak up because I could go on forever. So feel free to stop me if you have a question. But I'm going to start by saying that there's a lot of anecdotal evidence where you hear people have been stung and gotten well or had improvement. And just because this is not approved by the FDA does not mean, you know, anything, because it's, for me, it's approved by the GOD. And that's good enough for me. It doesn't have to be approved by the FDA. Because everything starts off as anecdotal evidence. All of the medicine we're using now originally started off as not being approved. There was no FDA when, you know, when the world was born. And so it's a man-made institution. So, you know, keep that in mind, that just because there may not be a lot of proof of this and a lot of, you know, double-blind studies doesn't mean it doesn't work. So I believe that the bee sting was the first acupuncture needle. And I can't prove it, but what we're trying to do with acupuncture now is an attempt to recreate the original form of acupuncture, which was the bee sting. And I've done over 50,000 treatments, and I've never had anybody go into anaphylactic shock. And, I mean, I've seen miracles. So at any point now, just feel free to jump in and stop me if you have questions. Otherwise, I'm going to just keep on going, because I'm not really sure if people can hear me or not. I'm just going to assume you can hear me. And if you don't speak up, that you don't have a question, so I'm going to keep on going. Anything that responds to steroids, cortisone, prednisone, is probably going to respond to bee sting therapy or bee acupuncture. And what you're doing when you're stinging somebody with a bee, you're using that venom. It's a poison. And the body has to break it down. And what's in that poison or in the venom are basically foreign proteins. So you're introducing foreign proteins or poison into the body. And it's a wake-up call, because the body has to go and break down that poison, and maybe as an afterthought, the body cleans up any other problem that's going on in that area. But the goal is to take something that's chronic, an illness that's chronic, not something where you just broke your leg, okay? Something you've had for at least 2 to 3 weeks or 6 weeks or 10 years, take a chronic situation and elevate it to an acute level. Because the idea in homeopathy that Hahnemann said, you can't cure anything that's chronic, you have to make it acute. And believe me, if you sting someone with a bee, all of a sudden now you have an acute situation and the body is forced to break down that foreign protein. So you've got two ways you can break it down. You can break it down with heat, and you could break it down with dilution. So when you get stung with a bee, the redness that shows up on your skin, that's the heat. Your body's trying to break down that bee venom. And then you also want to dilute the poison that's there. So then by diluting it, you have to bring fluid to the area, and that's why the area swells. So if you get stung by a bee or a wasp or yellow jacket or even by a spider or a snake, what's going to happen is the body is going to respond with redness because of the heat and by swelling because you're trying to dilute that poison. And that's why you have fluid coming to the area. So a lot of people think they're allergic to bees because they get a redness and swelling. But actually, that's a normal reaction. I'm more concerned about people that don't respond than people who have a big response. Now, of course, you don't want to not be able to breathe and go into anaphylactic shock, but if it's just redness and swelling and then maybe a day later it starts to itch, that's totally normal, okay? So what we're doing is we're choosing specifically a point to sting somebody, and it's like a cursor on a computer. We're putting the cursor there in a place where we want to sting the person, and then the body breaks down the bee venom, and as an afterthought, cleans up the underlying problem. So I'm sure I probably raised a lot of eyebrows there, and you have to think outside the box here that actually purposely getting stung could be a good thing. Does anybody have any questions at this point, or should I just keep on going?
So what, I mean, I understand your concern with, I mean, if people don't have a reaction, what's actually happening?
Is it
just becoming poisoned?
The immune system is so far gone and so asleep that it is not recognizing the poison. It's not recognizing the foreign protein, and it means that that person has a very weak immune system, and the only thing we have to keep on doing, we have to keep on going, we have to keep on stinging them until the body wakes up, and sometimes that might take 2 or 3 weeks,
and
then all of a sudden, you know, the body responds, and every place where you've stung all of a sudden gets red 2 or 3 weeks later. But you know, I'm more concerned about people who don't respond than people who have a big reaction.
I have two questions. My name is Bob Evans, and I am a beekeeper.
Okay.
And number one, I have no reaction when I'm stung.
But you've been a beekeeper
other than the pain,
for a long
of course.
Time. You've been a beekeeper for quite a while?
Over 20 years.
Right. So
all I get is a little red dot. And
right.
10 seconds later, you can't see that.
Yeah. If you're a beekeeper, you're not going to have, you're going to get sort of immune to it after a while. But when you first started, you probably did get a big red reaction and
no.
some swelling.
No, never.
Never, not ever.
No, the only, if I'm stung above the shoulders, yes.
Okay.
Below the shoulders, no.
Oh, interesting. So that probably means something.
Well,
but somewhere below the shoulders, your inner physician has gone to sleep and is not responding. But in general, beekeepers, after they, you know, they've been beekeepers for a while, kind of become immune and don't swell and don't get red and don't itch as much. But people who are doing this because they're ill and are consciously choosing to get stung because they have a chronic illness, if they don't react, then I'm more worried. Whereas a beekeeper who's been around bee venom for a long time, and the longer you've been around it, the less you're likely to, you know, to have a reaction. It's very different than somebody who's just starting out and is not reacting at all.
I see.
And who's ill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yellow jackets and bumblebees and wasps and hornets will raise welts on me, but
their venom is much stronger, and
yes.
That's why we don't use it in therapy, because a lot of people have more of an allergic reaction to them.
And the other question is, how dangerous is it to get inebriated from bee stings?
Well, that's a good question. My first response is, when you bring up the word inebriated, you definitely don't want to do alcohol and get stung at the same time. So I'm just saying, for those people who are listening who might think about doing bee sting therapy or bee acupuncture as a treatment, and then they want to have their beer at night that same night, it's not a good mix. But in terms of getting drunk on bee venom, in a sense, I would have to say when I first got stung, my first bee sting that I was doing on purpose as a treatment, I would say I got very high from it.
Yes.
I got extremely high. And I was, you know, very upbeat. But then you can have a drop from it as well. It doesn't, you know, the bee venom actually and the cortisol levels that come out of being stung by bees last about 24 to 48 hours. So, but I will say myself that I did get a high from getting stung. So I think it's very real. And you get a sense of well-being from it. So those people who are depressed, it's actually a good antidote. It's a good treatment for depression.
Well,
you know, but it is real. You can get inebriated. You can get, you know, a sense of well-being, and it can be overdone, and so I would highly recommend not being stung on an empty stomach.
Well, I try not to get stung that bad, but some of the removal jobs are trying, especially when the weather changes.
Yeah.
But
well, I would highly recommend that you make sure that you eat and your blood sugar is not too low.
Always do, but
yeah, make sure.
Thunder and lightning does not do well with removals.
Yeah.
So.
It's a very good question, and nobody's ever asked me that before. But I do get a sense of when I haven't been stung for a while, and if I get stung, either on purpose or by accident, sometimes I get a sense of well-being. And if you get stung too much, you can feel high. You can feel like you're drunk.
Euphoric.
Yes, a euphoria. So it's a really good antidote for depression.
The spring of the year, you might better go out and get, if you're going to work with bees, go out and get it over and done with.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
Lessen the chance.
Yeah.
Prophylactically get stung. Let's put it that way.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Very good questions. I'm very impressed.
I have another question for you, Amber.
Okay.
On getting a reaction, the swelling and redness, from the time you get stung to you get the reaction, I mean, some, like my wife, for example, she gets stung, she gets no reaction. The next day, 24 hours later, it swells and it's red and it itches for 3 more days. But there's like a 24-hour delay, whereas most people don't get a delay. I'm not sure what that is indicating either.
There are 4 different reactions. 2 of them are local, and 2 of them are like systemic. So the one that's really scary is the immediate systemic, which is your anaphylactic shock. Then you have your delayed systemic, which is kind of like a flu-like sensation, and it's not really involved in that with the redness and the itching and swelling. It's more of a systemic reaction. So those are 2 systemic reactions. The one that's scary is the first 15 minutes that somebody could die, you know. The local reactions, you can get an immediate local reaction, or what you're describing, your wife is getting a delayed local reaction. And so she's getting the delayed one. It means that her immune system is a little bit suppressed. So does she feel the sting when it goes in? Is it a hot, spicy burn? She feels it?
Yeah, she can feel it, yeah.
But it doesn't get red right away.
Right,
so
it doesn't swell or get red.
Right. So it means that her immune system is a little bit suppressed, but within 24 hours, it's not too long. I mean, if it was like 3 or 4 days or 2 weeks and she had no reaction, then I'd be a lot more concerned. I'm a little concerned, but not overly so. Some people don't, their body just doesn't recognize it as a foreign protein, and it takes that 24-hour period of time, and then it starts with the redness. And that's the body's way of, bringing heat to the area. It's just like most people wouldn't eat raw meat in this day and age, right? So you throw a hamburger onto a skillet, you wouldn't eat raw pork usually, because, it's scary now these days that might have bacteria in it. So basically we cook it or we heat that protein, and that's what we're doing with the bee venom. So the body's sending heat to the area, and then it gets red. And then it sends fluid to the area to dilute it and try to take some of that. When you have a poison, you try to dilute it. So if you drink something that's a poison, you try to drink a lot of water to get it out of your system. And so the body sends fluid there to try to, to dilute that poison. And the itching is actually a very good sign. The itching is when new blood comes back into the area, and you know that most of the venom is broken down, and now new blood is flowing back in there. But the itching can really be very annoying, and it can last for 2 days. And I'll say this now because it's very important, if you're doing this as a treatment, if you're doing it on purpose, you want to stay on the trunk of the body, which means not the arms and legs, not the hands and feet. You want to stay on the torso, on the front of the body or on the spine, on the back of the body, because you don't get as much swelling, as much itching, as much, I can't sleep, this is driving me nuts, I never want to do this again. Whereas if you get stung on the hands and feet and you're doing it as a treatment, not as a beekeeper, but, you know, as a treatment, and you're purposely, because you have arthritis or you have a bad wrist, and you're purposely going and stinging on the wrist on your first treatment, it may swell up and itch so bad you may never do this again and you may quit. And so I'm looking to keep people going. And so the most important thing is just to stay on the trunk of the body. So, you know, to go back to your original question, 24 hours delayed reaction, not too bad. Just it indicates a little bit of sort of a lowered immune system, and the person just really needs to, you know, beef it up and be stung more often to raise that, you know, level of the immune system up to a higher level so they can fight off any infections or, you know, help that person get well faster.
So would you recommend sticking to a single sting at a time until that reaction becomes, you know, quicker?
Not necessarily. It depends on the person. If the person is very small and very thin, okay, if the, let's say, a woman who's thin, you know, or anybody who's thin or a child, they're going to respond, they're going to be more sensitive to bees, and you need fewer stings. You don't want to sting somebody every single day on purpose because you want the body to have time to heal. So I would go every other day. But in general, you can start to go up in the stings, because if you stay with just one sting every other day, let's say, that the body might get used to it and go like, oh, yeah, it's just that one sting. Oh, well, you know, they did that a couple days ago, and kind of slough it off as if it's no big deal. But if you start to increase the stings, so you start with one, and then a couple days later, maybe you do two, and then maybe you do two for, you know, twice, you know, every other day for a week, and then maybe the next week you jump it up to three, you know, eventually you're going to start to get a bigger and faster reaction. But I think if you stay with the one, the body might get used to it and just kind of slough it off and not respond. So it depends, but if the person is, you know, doesn't want to do more than one, then I would respect that. But you have to get to the point where you get a healing crisis. And a healing crisis is that delayed systemic reaction where you get either a low-grade fever, you kind of feel like you have the flu, you feel lethargic, you might feel a little nauseous, or you might have diarrhea, and it's sort of a feeling of malaise, like a flu, like you just want to stay in bed and stay under the covers and maybe not even read, maybe just go to sleep. And you've got to have that sort of healing crisis and then break through that and then keep going. And then they say you can't get well until you have the healing crisis. So it's not just the getting red and having a swelling and an itching. It's you've got to have enough venom in there to kind of get, it's almost like we've had a lot of snow this winter, those of us who live, you know, in a snow belt. And it's like when you're stuck in a snowdrift, you can, with your car, you can get go up and back and up and back, but you got to get up and over that snowbank and beyond and be able to drive. Otherwise, you're stuck in that rut and you're not really going anywhere. So, you know, bee stings hurt. So if you're going to do it, you want to do enough to get up and over the snowdrift and up and over through that healing crisis and have the person, you know, be able to tolerate, you know, 3 to 5 stings a couple of times a week, you know, for them to get well, especially if it's an autoimmune disease, you know, something where the immune system's not responding well. If it's just arthritis or they just have back pain from an old, like, you know, injury or something, or knee pain from an old football injury, it's a totally different situation if it's very localized. But if it's a systemic reaction, you know, and if somebody has an autoimmune disease where the body's attacking itself, I don't think one sting, you know, once a week or a couple of times a week is really going to amount to a hill of beans. It's probably going to be, the body's just going to get used to it and just kind of ignore it. That would be my gut feeling. I would work towards working your way up to at least, if it's an autoimmune disease, 3 to 5 stings twice a week. And maybe, you know, if it's like MS, you know, we're really talking about sometimes even up to 20 stings three times a week for 3 to 6 months. It's really a commitment. This is like, it's a whole lifestyle. And having access to bees over that length of time, if you don't have a hive, you have to have a beekeeper who's a friend, or you have to order bees by mail, you know, or get a hive in your backyard to be able to do it. You know, it's really it's a decision to make a commitment. And not everybody wants to do it, and sometimes you have to be desperate. And if you're not desperate, and, you know, if you're not in a wheelchair and you're not blind, sometimes, you know, you just, it's kind of like when I first heard about the bees, I heard it was good for arthritis, and I was maybe in my 20s. I'm in my 60s now. But when I was in my 20s and I heard about it from Charlie Mraz on TV or whatever, you know, it went in one ear and out the other because I didn't know anybody who had arthritis. But if you know somebody who's really suffering, you want to tell them about this, you know, because it really could make a difference. So it just depends on how desperate the person is to get well. So you need a sense of desperation, and you need access to bees, and you need a willingness to persist and keep on going even when the going gets tough and if it's itching and keeping you up at night, because you don't want to take Benadryl, you don't want to do anything, you know, to undo it, because the whole goal is to wake up that inner physician inside.
So even with things like arthritis, you're still striving for that delayed systemic reaction before you're going to get relief, or?
Yeah, they say unless you get a healing crisis, and it's going to happen within the first 5 to 7 treatments, but if you're only doing one bee sting, like once a week, you're probably never going to get to that level where you get up into the healing crisis, you know, unless the person's extremely thin and very sensitive. Like my first time, I had a testing, which this is important to talk about. You always do a testing and you always have an EpiPen there, you know, in case somebody really goes into anaphylactic shock. So I had a testing and I waited 15 minutes. And then I had 3 more stings. So I had like basically 3.5 stings on my first visit. And I had a bladder infection that just wasn't responding to Western medicine. And I got stung in my pubic hair. Believe me, I was very high from it. I had a euphoria. But that night and the next night, I mean, the itching and that feeling of malaise, like a flu-like feeling, I mean, it just, you know, it happened to me like in the first couple of days. I had my healing crisis in the first couple of days, and I had all that itching, and it just, I mean, if you're itching in the middle of the night, you can't almost stop yourself. The itching is so awful. So often we start in the back because it's harder to scratch back there, you know, but I would say you need to get up to at least 3 to 5 stings within the first, you know, few weeks, you know, or month. You know, depending upon that person, if that person is really scared and they only want to stay with one sting each time once a week, it's going to take you a long time to get up to that healing crisis. And you got to get to that until, if you don't ever get to that place where you get the healing crisis, where you feel like you have the flu or you have diarrhea or you just feel nauseous or something, then you're probably not going to make much progress.
And so, something like arthritis, after you hit that healing crisis, and you're—I don't know if you're really on a maintenance plan or something at that point. Do you cut back then the frequency, the amount, or are you still?
Yeah, you could, and it depends on the pain level the person's under. If they're in a lot of pain and it's in a lot of different joints, you know, then you work your way around, and you can experiment. You can do some experiments, but I'll say this now, that I don't usually sting where it's already red. So let's say the person has arthritis in both their knees and both their elbows, let's say. And you started it off the first month and you're staying on the torso of the body. So if you want to work on the lower half of the body, like if you want to work on the knees, but you can't go directly to the knees right away, unless they're a beekeeper. If they're a beekeeper and they're used to getting stung, you can pretty much sting anywhere. But we're talking about people who are not used to getting stung. I wouldn't go to the knees right away. I mean, you could do it for testing, but if you do like 5 bee stings on their knee, it's going to blow up and they're going to get discouraged. They might go through the healing crisis. They might have a lot of itching, and they may never come back. And so you stay on the trunk of the body, but if you go from the waist down on the trunk of the body, let's say we're going to focus on the spine. From the waist down, you're going to be working on the legs, so you can focus on the knees from the waist down on the back. And if you want to work on the elbows or the shoulders, you can focus from the waist up on the spine, because that's where the nerves come out of the spine. You know, I've written a book, and so you can, if you decide to get the book at some point, and I have a website, so you could look in the book and you can see where the nerves or the acupuncture meridians, you know, are. But you want the first month or so, or 3 weeks at least, you know, you want to stay on the torso or the trunk of the body. But if the person's a beekeeper, then you can go anywhere you want because they're already used to the venom, so it won't be so bad and they're not going to give up. But somebody brand new who's scared, you definitely want to stay on the trunk of the body. Then, all right, so let's say they had their healing crisis and now you want to, very slowly, you decide you want to go down to one of the knees. Well, you don't just go straight to the knee. You work your way down the leg. Maybe you do one leg, one sting or two stings on the thigh. And if you're doing five stings, you might do the three other stings still on the trunk of the body. And maybe after you do that, then you go down to the knee and maybe start with, you know, just one down there. But after a while, if the body gets used to it, then you could do, you know, four or five on that knee. And then they can compare that knee to their other knee and just see, you know, if both knees are similar in pain. It's an experiment where you're only stinging one knee and not the other, and you get to see which knee is hurting. But again, if you're a beekeeper, you can go to the knee right away. You can go where it, you know, if someone's a beekeeper and they're used to getting stung and they're not going to give up, as long as they're taking plenty of vitamin C, which is very important, I would not do bee sting therapy without, and I would not be a beekeeper without at least having some vitamin C. Because when you get stung by bee, it stimulates the adrenal glands to produce cortisol, which, you know, needs the vitamin C to create that cortisol. So otherwise you're making the body do something it can't do because it doesn't have the raw ingredients. So a lot of people go into anaphylactic shock just because they don't have enough vitamin C in their body and the body can't make the cortisol. And that's what happens when you get stung and you can't make the cortisol, you go into an anaphylactic reaction. It's kind of like you don't have the raw ingredients. You're trying to force the body to make the cortisol and you don't have the raw ingredients to make the cortisol, and the body just freaks out and says, like, I can't do this. I can't handle this. It's too much. So that's why vitamin C is very important. But, yeah, I mean, if it's arthritis, it's, you know, very manageable, and you just do enough stings, and you'll know. If you do three stings and the knee still hurts a day or two later, then maybe you try five stings the next time. You know, but you can experiment. But if it's still red from the last time you stung, then I would go to another spot. I would go to the other knee, or I would go to the shoulder, or I'd go to a place that's not already red. Because if it's still red, it means there's still venom there, and you're kind of almost wasting the venom. But sometimes what I do is I'll do a double sting or a triple sting. Like if there's one spot on somebody's knee that's killing them, I might sting them five times and leave the stinger in and sting and have all those five stingers be in that one spot. Get as close as I can and put all the venom, you know, as close as I can to that original stinger. So I'll put the stinger in and leave it in 15 minutes, and then I'll catch another bee, and I'll try to sting as close as I can to that original stinger and keep going until I've done, let's say, three or five stings, and I call that, you know, like, you know, bringing out the big guns, really. I mean, but if you're stinging 3 days later and it's still red where you've already stung, I'd probably go to a different spot because there's already venom there, and so you may as well go to a place where there's no redness, because you can actually put some more venom in there, if you follow me. So I know I'm jumping around a little bit.
I have a question for you now. Because your liver detoxifies everything, what effect does this have on liver disease?
Well, you know, when I first started with hearing about this, I was quite concerned that you could burn out the kidneys, you could burn out the adrenal glands, you could, you know, burn out all those organs like the liver that detoxify the body.
Right.
And so I came into this. I have to say I'm very passionate now. You know, it's been since 1993 that I've been doing this, so I've been doing it a while now. But basically I came in a skeptic, and what I discovered was I've never had anybody go into anaphylactic shock, and I've never had anyone not get good results. And I've never had anybody say that, you know, they were having problems with their liver, that their liver enzymes were elevated or that they actually had measurable results. But, you know, the liver, interestingly enough, not only detoxifies the body of poisons, although the skin does that as well, and of course the kidneys do it.
Yes.
And, you know, there are a lot of organs that detoxify, including the large intestine. But I think you're the fellow who asked the question about the inebriation.
Yes.
And the liver and inebriation in Chinese medicine go together, in Western medicine too. So if you have too much alcohol, you're gonna burn out your liver.
Right.
And you get cirrhosis of the liver. So I have never had anybody say that inebriation from bee stings or too many bee stings had a negative effect on the liver. And actually, it's been used for liver cancer. Actually, in terms of cancer, I mean, there are a lot of really good anecdotal stories. But actually, if you do, I'm not a medical doctor.
Okay? I understand that.
Yeah, but a medical doctor can actually buy injectable bee venom, and I'm very prejudiced who you get it from, because I don't like, you know, injectable venom that has a lot of synthetic stuff in it.
Yes.
And I'm sure once the pharmaceutical companies come upon it and decide they're going to put their own little, you know, tracer in there, to, you know, because you can't patent anything that's a natural substance. You have to put something special in it so you can get a trademark and spend billions of dollars, you know, getting it through the FDA. But the best bee venom is coming out of British Columbia, and, you know, I can certainly tell you about that person and that venom. But you can actually take a very, very long needle, and you can actually inject that bee venom into the liver directly if someone has liver cancer or liver disease. Or you could choose, if you're doing bee sting therapy or bee acupuncture, you can look to see where the liver meridian is. And it's bilateral, it's on both sides. Most of the acupuncture meridians are on both sides of the body. You don't have to buy my book. You can get any book from the library on acupuncture and look to see where the liver meridian is. To, you know, if you have somebody who has a problem with a certain organ, you can look to see where the meridians are. So, you know, if you have a liver problem, you can actually look to see the liver meridian starts on the big toe. And it goes up the foot, up the leg, up the torso of the body, and it exits right by the rib cage. And so you would want to sting along that liver meridian. And I think that would be very beneficial for you, since you ask questions both that relate to the liver, you know, meridian.
Well,
or
this all started with a set of kidney stones, which at first they thought that I did a lot of drinking, which I don't.
Yeah.
I don't imbibe, but that's neither here nor there. And it's damaged the liver, of course.
Okay. So in Chinese medicine, the kidneys is the mother of the liver.
Yes.
Now, we're a little off the topic about bees, but since I'm an acupuncturist, you're going to get my spin on it. My spin is, if the water element or the kidneys, which is part of the water element, is involved, if you started off with kidney stones and then you started to develop liver problems, it's sort of like any mother who doesn't have enough milk to feed her baby.
Mm-hmm.
The baby's going to start screaming. So you're going to have a little baby, and you're trying to nurse that baby. And let's say you can't get formula, and all you're stuck with is breast milk, you know, and that baby has no way of surviving, you know. So what you've got is the liver, in a sense, is like the child of the kidney in Chinese medicine. So if the kidney is having problems and you don't address those kidney stones or whatever creating the problems for the kidney, eventually you're going to have liver problems. And then after that, eventually you're going to have heart problems.
Yes.
And then after that, eventually you're going to have stomach or spleen problems and have diabetes. So, I mean, it could go on and on. But, you know, from a Chinese medicine perspective, from an acupuncture perspective, it makes sense to me that even somebody who doesn't drink could actually have liver problems, even though the original problem started in the kidneys. So you would be a good person, and if you can't afford my book, see if you can go to your local library and get them to order it for you. It's called Be in Balance, and they can order it directly from me. And it came out, you know, in a paperback version, and now it's like on its ninth printing or something, but it's, and then it was on a CD-ROM, and now it's only available in a spiral binding. But you can, you know, my website is foreveramberrose.com, and you can just go on there, and you can click on my email, and you can have your local library just order it from me. And you,
that
you
sounds
know,
like
you
a very
know.
Good plan. As
yeah,
far as
I mean,
affording the book, that's when it comes to health. I think we can, all of us can afford most anything.
Yeah. Yeah, and the truth is
need.
That there are a lot of resources within that book that will help you understand why somebody with a kidney problem would then naturally, it would make natural sense. It's like winter, what comes after winter, the winter is the water element, which is the
mm-hmm.
kidneys and the bladder, and what comes after winter is spring in the seasons.
Yes.
So what you're describing is something that relates to the seasons of nature. So in the spring, you have the liver and the gallbladder involved. And so what you're describing is you had a problem in the winter, and now it's moved to the spring.
Mm-hmm.
And then if the heart is involved, then it moves to the summer. So there's a seasonal component. Obviously, I can't draw it. I mean, if we had Skype or something, if we did something at some point with a video, I could actually, or if you had my book, you could actually see that there's a seasonal component to this. So there's a circle involved. There's a cycle of nature, which is winter, spring, summer, late summer, and fall. And then there's another cycle that's called the co-cycle. That's more like instead of the mother-child, which is what you're describing, it's like the grandmother. So if you had no liver problems at all, but you had kidney stones and then a heart problem, that would be the grandmother to the grandchild.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a different cycle. And then I would say you want to focus on the kidneys and the heart. But
well,
in this case,
the whole subject is intriguing. For me, I had an awakening about 3 years ago with an acupuncturist.
Oh.
And I got to say, it's an awakening. I hate needles.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely hate needles. But I went into an acupuncturist and could just barely walk. And when I got done at the acupuncturist, I left there, went immediately to the honey house, and extracted a 55-gallon drum full of honey.
Right. I can believe it. Yeah.
Well, of course, I upset all her hard work, but
yeah.
The thing was, I was not in pain. I could straighten
right.
my back.
Right, exactly.
So regardless of what people think or anything else, some of these old ways do work, and they work very, very fine.
Right, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, to be honest, I was an acupuncturist before I became, you know, someone who stung people with bees. So I started off as an acupuncturist, and when I read my first article about people stinging themselves on purpose for MS,
yes,
I thought, oh, my God, if they stung in the acupuncture points, I wonder if it would be more powerful. And I thought I made it up. I literally thought I made it up. It was like I was bringing these two forms of medicine together,
mm-hmm.
only to discover when I went to China 3 months later, they've been doing this for thousands of years. In the acupuncture points, you know, and it was very humbling because I thought I made it up, and you know, actually now I believe that this was the original form of acupuncture, and what we're doing now is just we're trying to get back to the bees, we're trying to get back to nature, we're trying to get back to the original form of acupuncture, which was somebody accidentally was got stung when they were collecting honey out of a feral hive or something, you know, and all of a sudden their back pain went away or their arm pain went away. And so they started experimenting with bees, and then they started experimenting with sticks and stones and poking into the acupuncture points, and eventually they started using needles.
Well, but, that iced man that they found preserved in the Andes.
Yeah, right.
Do you remember he had
the tattoo marks.
He had the tattoo marks.
Yeah. This is very old, and it's very, very
yes.
sacred medicine. And as I said at the beginning, you know, aerodynamically, bees are too heavy to fly. But they don't know it, so they've learned to fly. You know, so we have a lot to learn from the bees, you know. I mean, they teach us a lot. And, you know, I believe that, you know, if you sting in the acupuncture points, it's going to be more powerful because you're using two different systems, you know, coming from different, you know, whereas some people, like in Europe, they'll just kind of sting where it hurts. It's almost like trigger point therapy. So my guess is, I don't know, but when you went for your acupuncture for your back, did they do any needles that were far away from your back? That
yeah,
weren't near the
one back that, the one that goes into the earlobe.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And I was warned before she put the needle in that she says, if you're in pain, you're going to feel this very, very badly.
Yeah.
And, boy, I come about 6 foot in the air.
Right. So you don't necessarily have to do the acupuncture needles where the pain is
no.
on the back, you know. And so there are points on the body that, you know, that are reflex points that are related to the back that are nowhere near the back.
Yeah, between
like
the fingers.
Like you said, on the ear, or maybe there's a magical point on the hand that's
yes.
incredibly good for back pain. And I put, you know, the needle in the hand in a certain point until the patient feels it, and I have them get up and move around. And if their back is better, then I know the treatment has worked. So I like people coming in, if I'm just doing plain acupuncture and they're scared of the bees, I can actually have them be pain-free while the needles are still in.
Oh, that's...
And so that's really, it's an art. I mean, this whole thing is an art, even with the bees, you know, because, I mean, sometimes people get stung at a church picnic and pain that they felt for 17 years goes away. So it's not just, you know, somebody on the other end of that bee knowing where to sting. I mean, there's something, you know, there's sometimes when God is really the doctor and you get stung by, quote, accident, and it's exactly where you needed it.
Yes. And you know? I think there's another factor to all of this in the folk medicine realm. If you don't believe it, nothing's going to work. I don't care whether it's modern medicine, folk medicine, acupuncture, it doesn't make any difference. But if you have some faith in it,
yeah.
it does seem to help.
Yeah, it does. But the interesting thing, if we go back to the bees for a minute,
sure.
You know, people do talk about that placebo effect, you know, and a lot of researchers say, oh, you know, acupuncture is just the placebo effect, you know,
yeah.
that you have a good connection with the person or you really believe in it. But I'll tell you one thing, animals don't respond to the placebo effect. They only respond if it really works. So that's the nice thing with animals, and that's probably why they do a lot of research on animals. Not that I'm really big on that, but that when I sting horses and dogs with bees in acupuncture points and it works, I know it's not the placebo. I know it's the venom because they don't have the placebo effect. And actually, animals make their own vitamin C. Humans don't. So with animals, they don't. You don't need to give them extra vitamin C. But with humans, I would really highly recommend extra vitamin C. And depending on the size of the person, anywhere from 3,000 to 5,000 milligrams per day, even on the days when you're not getting stung. So it's kind of a lifestyle. You have to start incorporating it. And so, it can be a little expensive, you know. So you just maybe get the generic brand. It doesn't really matter what kind of vitamin C, as long as you have enough vitamin C in there so you can make the cortisol.
This has been a very, very interesting conversation. I do appreciate it, too.
Oh, well, I do, too, and it actually is a good shot in the arm for me because I'm not doing anywhere near as much stinging as I would like, and it's winter. You know, we've had a lot of snow, so it's hard to get around, and so I haven't been doing much stinging, so this is a chance for me to share my knowledge and make me feel like I'm making a difference because sometimes, you know, you feel like you're not helping enough people and you feel like you're not, you know, making
a
difference.
Where are you located, dear?
I'm in Woodstock, New York.
In Woodstock.
Where are you?
Well, not too far away, really.
Oh.
I'm in Madison, New York.
Oh.
Which is central New York, between Utica and Syracuse.
Okay. All right.
Up,
okay.
Well, my house is 5 miles off of Colgate University.
Oh,
campus.
Okay. Well, I have 3 dogs that I got up in Oswego, so I kind of go up there from time to time.
Yeah. Well.
Next time I'm going up, I'll try to look you up.
You're always welcome.
Okay.
I live just off of Route 20.
Okay. Yeah, and I do workshops and seminars. We're trying to get another workshop going for the spring, and then I'm going to do a certification class sometime in the spring or the summer. And once you buy the book, the actual classes are not that expensive. It's just the book is $85, and then if you have to ship it, it's like $10 for the shipping and handling. But you know, it's definitely worth what's in there because what you're getting is like all my, you know, my, let's say, 30 years of acupuncture knowledge. Like just that whole thing about the inebriation that you brought up and then the kidney stones and the liver issues and all that. You know, that's kind of a conversation that seems like it's off the topic, but it really isn't because a lot of people have symptoms in unusual places and it doesn't make sense in Western medicine. But it certainly makes sense in Chinese medicine.
Well,
the
Chinese medicine is a lot older.
Yeah,
and
right.
I think that we're finding out that, as with most anything, we have forgotten more knowledge than we know. And that is sad because we just keep pushing some of this old knowledge out of the way, thinking that the new is going to take its place when it does not always do that.
Yeah.
You need to revisit some of the older stuff.
Right. And, you know, really, some of the original, you know, all medicine that we have now actually started as anecdotal evidence, as I said at the beginning. And, you know, even like digitalis that they used, you know, for heart patients. I mean, they had witches out there in the countryside, you know, making, you know, witches brew out of foxglove. I mean, it was a poison, but it was an herb. But, I mean, you know, and it's like, you know, Rob, who lives near me here, Rob Overton, who's sort of got me on this conversation tonight, he knows I always kind of joke about this thing about prunes because, I mean, nobody ever has done any, you know, double-blind studies on whether prunes or prune juice work, but everybody knows what it does,
yes.
You know, if you have too
yes.
much of it. So, you know, it's like there's some things that's why my book has that little subtitle about common sense, because some things are just plain common sense, and if it works, it's certainly worth trying. And what I like about, you know, bee sting therapy, whether you sting in the acupuncture points or not, it's very low tech, and especially if you are a beekeeper, you know, you have access to the bees, and it's just a matter of, you know, purposely stinging yourself in the places that might make a difference.
Now, you spoke about the people that are shipping bees for this.
Yes, for this purpose.
For purpose.
There's. I'll just give you the name of one in particular, but you can go on the Internet and look. There are probably a few different ones now. But the man that I first discovered was, his name is Greg Ferris, and he has Ferris Apiaries in Maryland, just outside of Washington, D.C. So if you type into Google Ferris Apiaries, he should come up, and he's got an 800 number, and, you know, he probably sends out, I would guess, maybe 500 boxes of bees a week, and there are about 50 or 60 bees in that box, and they last about 2 weeks, and so especially people with MS who are stinging themselves, they might be doing 20 stings 3 times a week for 3 to 6 months, you know, they really need that steady supply of bees.
Well, I would think now, I offered to set up a nucleus hive for a MS patient.
Okay.
For just this purpose. I was not aware of your involvement in this or of you.
Yeah.
So I couldn't direct the young lady in that area, and I've lost contact with her now. But
Well, if she has MS, most people with MS do know about this treatment or have heard about it, and if she is in remission, she's probably sort of put it by the wayside. But I guarantee you, when she gets desperate, she will come back to it.
Well,
I will say this though, just because I had a free clinic for 3 or 4 years,
mm-hmm.
3 days a week, and what I noticed, unfortunately, what I noticed is that people who started stopped, and then did really well, and then stopped doing it because they felt so good. When they came back to it, didn't do as well.
Oh, dear.
They did, yeah. They lost a little bit of ground. And, you know, I mean, everybody's different, and you just don't know. But I highly recommend that people, if they're going to do it, not stop. Just keep on going. And it's a lifestyle commitment, especially if you have MS or lupus or AIDS or, you know, something that's incredibly serious,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Something you got to change your lifestyle for anyways.
Yeah, right, for sure. That's a good point. But
you know, this is another thing. I would think that, I don't know how many beekeepers are on here tonight, but I'm sure that most of the beekeepers that I've been acquainted with, if someone in their realm needed this type of therapy and asked, they would help them get started so that they the people could have their own bees to take care of this.
And that was my fantasy when I first read the article called Hope Stings Eternal, and it was all about this woman who had a free clinic, you know, and this man, Greg Ferris, was providing hives, and he was bringing hives to people's houses,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it was really a community feeling. And you hear stories when people are dying, their whole past flashes in front of them. Well,
mm-hmm.
my whole future flashed in front of me when I first read about this. And I could just see what I was seeing was a hive on every street corner, a hive in every neighborhood where people could use all the products of, you know, of the hive,
mm-hmm.
not just the venom. But, you know, and I think that's what we need. And I think we need to find a way to bring beekeeping back into the mainstream and not use as much with the pesticides and try to keep the bees alive. Because, I mean, if we can't do that, we won't even have people, you know, to sting, let alone bees to do the stinging. You know, we won't have the bees. If we don't have the bees, we're not going to have the crops. If we don't have the crops, we can't survive. So,
yes.
You know, it's I don't talk about this lightly without mentioning my respect for the beekeepers who are trying to keep bees alive. You know, because when I sting someone with a bee, that bee's going to die. So we can't just do it lightly. And the people who come to this work, very often, you know, beekeepers are interested and they start, you know, giving bees out in jars to people or setting up a hive on someone's property. And then people will then start coming to you maybe. Or since now that you know about me, you could have them call me. They could get my book or they could ask me questions. I'm actually working with somebody in Hawaii who has a horse, and you know, who has arthritis in both knees, but especially in one knee, and she's documenting the whole thing now in photographs. She sent me pictures. She's doing video. She found a local beekeeper, and together they're buying my book. They're sharing the cost of the book, and they're working together. And then they have somebody who used to live in Connecticut, who used to do this a long time ago on people. And those three people are working on one horse.
Oh.
And I'm, you know, we're emailing back and forth and we're calling back and forth and comparing notes. But this horse is getting better, but it did go through that healing crisis. There was one point when she said to me, I'm scared because he seems very lethargic and, you know, sort of, you know, favoring that foot and seems like he's having diarrhea and all this. And I just knew it was the healing crisis. And I just said, don't stop. Whatever you do, don't stop. Because if you stop and then you then choose to pick it up again, that healing crisis will start right where it left off.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not, you don't escape it. There's no escaping that healing crisis. You have to go through the healing crisis and come out the other end. Then you have a chance of getting well.
Well,
I don't know. It seems like we only have maybe 3 or 4 people on this conversation, so I hope I'm not boring the others. If there are any other people there who have, like, burning desires and questions, I mean,
yeah.
I'll stay on for as long as you want me to. I'll stay on for 5 hours. I mean, I love this topic, so.
Yeah, Amber, can I just say something?
Sure.
You did my dogs. This is Mickey.
Oh, I thought it sounded like Mickey. Yeah.
I want to tell you, they're running around like puppies.
Really?
165-pound galoops. Except when they slide in the snow, maybe they'll yip a little bit. But they're doing terrific.
That's great.
Can't wait. Matter of fact, my vet was doing some acupuncture to the one guy. He's so bad.
He was.
And he wrote down on a card, I have it here, he says to work on the stomach 36.
Right, stomach 36.
Yeah.
That is, it's like the mother of all points. It's like an earth point on an earth pathway. And actually, if you do it, let me tell you when to do it.
Okay.
I would do it. Okay, now this coming Saturday is daylight savings time, so that we're moving the clocks forward. So you're going to have to subtract. So starting Sunday, the stomach meridian is usually at its peak from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. So we're going to have to say between 8 a.m. and 10 a.m.
Okay,
if you sting stomach 36, which is kind of by the knee, just below the knee, if you do it at the right time of day, you'll get even more bang for your buck there. You get more bee venom out of it. You'll get more, you know, more energy. But that's a wonderful point, and it's a very famous point. It's one of the most famous acupuncture points, stomach 36.
Okay, I hope we can get some bees out of this. Maybe this Sunday, yeah.
Yeah, if you can, but, I mean, you know, anytime soon, just keep in mind, because I know, Mickey, you have my book and Rob has my book. So keep in mind, we're about to move the clocks forward. So when we do that, you know, and you're looking at the Chinese clock in there, and there are 12 major meridians, the stomach being one of them, the liver being another one. Each meridian, since we have 24 hours in a day and 12 meridians, each meridian is at its peak for 2 hours. So, for example, the stomach now is like, it's normally 7 to 9, but because of daylight saving, we have to, you know, we have to go ahead and then subtract. So everything has to be, you know, looked at from a different perspective once we're in daylight saving. But if the fellow who was talking before who wants, if you want to sting the kidney, you would sting kidney 10, which is behind the knee, actually. And you would do it between, after next Sunday, because of daylight savings, you would do it between 6 and 8 at night, and you'll get more out of it. It's a water point on the kidney pathway at the kidney time of day. So there's a lot to this. If you ask, I mean, it's not that complicated, but there's like a time of day for different points, and there's a logic behind which meridians to pick. And
yeah, I was kind of hoping, waiting until we finish the course with you before I really get into it with the dogs.
But it sounds like you're already, you know, your dogs, I didn't know you were on this call. So, you know, I could have used your dogs as an example. But, I mean, you know, it's so great. It's so great that they're doing so well. I think dogs and horses really, really respond very quickly to bee venom.
Oh, yeah, he had very bad hip dysplasia. And he's running around. Like I said, except when he slides on the ice, then you get a yip. But that's going away now. So,
mm-hmm. Right, the ice is going away. We're starting to get some spring here. But
yeah.
So, you know, when the spring comes, when people have allergies, of course, you want to use pollen. Local pollen is really good. But think about the springtime. It's the meridians that go with the spring would be the liver and the gallbladder. And it's all about decision-making and making plans and having goals and being able to really see your future. So, you know, the springtime is a time for new beginnings.
Good.
And,
okay.
Oh, Mickey, I'm glad that you were there to cheer me on. I didn't know we had any other local beekeepers on this call, so that's great. Well, thanks for everybody who's been here, and if anybody else has questions, I'm still willing to talk. So if you you need to leave, you can leave. But if you want to stay on and talk, if it's okay with Rob, it's okay with me.
Sure, we're fine. We have at least another 45 minutes.
Okay.
Well, one thing that I would like to do is, so it doesn't get forgotten, is thank you very much for the information. And
oh,
Rob, also
welcome.
Thank you very much for bringing this young lady on. It's been very informative. And if
really?
I get knocked off or something happens, I want you to understand that I really do appreciate it.
I really hear that. And I hear that what I'm saying makes a lot of sense to you. And you've
yes,
had good experiences, you know, with acupuncture. So if you're a beekeeper and you're interested or fascinated with acupuncture, you might end up, even because you're trying to work on yourself, you might end up learning enough that you start stinging other people, you know. So
well,
the whole idea
know.
Is it's almost like a contagious thing. You know, you teach people. My goal is not to keep this all for myself. My goal is to share it, because just like Charlie Mraz kept sharing it, he did this for 65 years. He was called the king of bee venom therapy. He actually, you know, Rob said earlier that I knew him. He actually asked me to marry him. But he's a little older, about 50 years older than me. So it was a bit of a stretch, but he gave me my first three hives, my first three real hives. I had an observation hive from Greg Ferris. But he gave me my first real hives, and they all had that little hole in the front, and that's why I was able to get the bees out in the winter without opening the hive at all. Because I used a hair dryer, and I warmed up my jar, and I just held it up. I don't know if the same thing would happen if you held it, you know, down by the bottom, but I think if you've got that hole right in the middle of, you know, like a few hive bodies there, you know, it's like the bees in the middle of the winter, they just, you hold up a warm jar there, they're going to come running out to investigate, especially if you breathe into the jar. It would
be a little hard
out.
For me to do that. Mine, up until recently, were under about 3 foot of snow.
Oh, goodness gracious. Yeah, you probably got sucked in up there. Yeah,
yeah, it's going away fast now.
Yeah.
The bees have been out flying a little bit.
Yeah.
So, of course, there's nothing for them to do except a little maple sap, but that's about it.
Yeah.
But
pretty soon there'll be daffodils and crocuses and all kinds of
things. We'll get those little colts, what I guess you call them. They'll look like dandelions alongside of the road.
Yeah.
They're on the south side of the road all the time. They're about, look like a bachelor button, I guess.
Yeah, right.
I think some of the pussy willow was beginning to pop.
Oh, really?
Really?
Oh, yeah, well, a bud break was about 2 weeks ago, but, they're getting pretty big now.
Really?
Well, yeah.
It is not warm here yet. We haven't. It was warm today, but it wasn't that. I'm pretty a housebound right this moment, but.
Yeah.
I don't see much sneaking through the snow and the mud yet. but up here.
Yeah.
One of our first is the skunk cabbage.
Yeah.
Oh.
So. And we've got plenty of that in a swamp across the road. That's always a love to see the bees coming back from that.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, thank God for the beekeepers. You know, we couldn't survive without you guys. So
yeah,
and I really do appreciate you. I don't have any hives right now myself, but I did, and I know how hard it is to keep them going, and you know, and
it was a very disappointing year. How's that? But I would imagine that the honey production will be good to get in this year or the next, one of the two.
Yeah.
As long as the bees survive and we can get a little bit here and there where everybody is happy.
Yeah.
And the rewards are still sweet.
It is. It is.
So.
Definitely. Any other questions from anybody who's still hanging around?
Actually, I've got a couple of them. Mm-hmm. I've got my future father-in-law has a chronic back problems.
Okay.
Where his discs are non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
Leaves him in bed for days at a time.
Mm.
And also have another, wondering what maybe we could do with him as far as bee stings. I am a beekeeper. And I've also got a friend that I graduated with high school with that, you know, she's been telling me she's been going through some really bad pain with lupus.
Mm.
And, you know, she's got a lot of doctors, a lot of good doctors, but nothing seems to help.
So I'm going to tell you that the guy with the bulging discs or the disc problem is going to be an easier case, and the person with the lupus is going to be a more difficult case, because disc problems are not really a systemic thing. It's an injury that he had or something that happened, you know, and it's very localized to that one area, and you can get some B stings there and make sure he's on some vitamin C, and you can really help him there in the low back. But with lupus, you know, she's looking at 3 to 6 months of doing this at least twice a week and working your way up to maybe, I don't know, is she thin? Is she a thin woman and small, or is she a little bit heavy set or large?
Sort of average. I don't know if she came on tonight. I told her about, you know, the broadcast and everything,
okay.
And, you know, I don't know if she had time to get on and check
mm-hmm.
you out or not.
Well, if she's kind of an average height, average build, I would say with lupus, you're really, you know, she would start on the vitamin C for a couple of days. You start with the testing, make sure she's not allergic, and, you know, you basically, over time, you stay on the trunk of the body, stay on the torso, and with her probably, you know, on the back, and going up and down the spine and, you know, not stinging where it's already red once you've started, and you can move around a little bit. But she's really looking at least twice a week for 3 to 6 months, and eventually, I would say if she's average size, you're looking at maybe eventually working up to maybe at least, I would say at least 10 stings each time, each a day, and twice a week. So that would be, you know, at least 20 bee stings a week for 3 to 6 months. One, you know, not right away, but, I mean, you work your way up there, and then she gets to, like, a little plateau. I mean, I had one fellow I was doing 3 times a week, and I was stinging him 50 times with 50 bees. But he walked out of a wheelchair, you know. So, I mean, we were really working hard. And at the beginning, we were just working with his arm. We weren't even trying to get him to walk out of the wheelchair. We weren't focused on that, on the legs. We were really focusing on his arm because he couldn't feed himself. He had MS, and he was in this wheelchair, and he was 38 years old. And he's in my book. He wrote a little anecdote in my book. It's called Lonnie. And so we were just trying to help him with his arm because he couldn't move his fingers and he couldn't feed himself. And but, you know, after a month or two, he was using chopsticks, eating Chinese food, using the remote control in the nursing home to change the channel on the TV. I mean, this guy had all the flexibility in his arm that he wanted, you know. And then we started working on the legs. We started the low back, and we started working down the legs. And I have photographs. I just recently came across of him taking his first steps. He wanted me to wait. You know, he wanted me to come there when he was going to take his first steps, and he waited. You know, he had the walker there, and he was, you know, he did not want to try walking without me being there because he wanted me to take a picture of him to taking his first steps. But it was really quite remarkable. But, I mean, with him, you know, he really didn't care, and he didn't have much feeling from the waist down and in his arms. So we were doing 50 stings, and believe me, I mean, I had 2 volunteer helpers, and you know, this was a total free clinic. I mean, there was no money exchange at all, but I had 2 volunteers, and they were just lining up the bees as fast as they could, getting them out of the jars, and, you know, we stung him 50 times, 3 times a week. And I usually say to people, give me at least 6 months, and in the 7th month, he started walking out of that wheelchair. Yeah. And got out of the nursing home and went into, like more of a halfway house. You know, but that's certainly better than being in a nursing home at age 38.
Well, I'm more than likely going to try to go ahead and get your book because, like I say, he's kind of skeptical. I brought it up to him about stinging him on the back before.
Yeah.
He's kind of skeptical because of the redness and stuff. I do it myself. I've got old whiplash injuries in my neck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just take them back there, you know, sting every now and then when it gets to bother me.
Yep, that's
goes
what
away
I do
and
too. Mm-hmm.
Goes away almost immediately. And,
yeah.
You know, I'm usually good for a few weeks.
Yeah, I guess it's a little bit hard, you know, when you have people who, you know, are not so gung-ho on it. But if they get results, that's the proof is in the pudding. If you sting them and they get some results, but, you know, fortunately for the bat guy, who's probably a little more resistant than the lupus person is probably more interested, you know, because she's more desperate. Maybe the other guy is more scared of the bees, it sounds like, but or doesn't want to go through it. But if he understands that if he can get through the first month of the itching and then maybe that flu-like feeling, he will get so much benefit from it. And he may have to do it from time to time. He may come to you and say, listen, I need a couple more stings or something. But low back pain is something pretty easy to work with. Lupus is much harder because it's systemic. It's an autoimmune disease where the body's attacking itself. You know, the back pain, the body's not attacking itself. It's, you know, it's a physiological thing where the disc is bulging out, you know, and it's, you know, it's like something like on a, you know, on a highway or something where there's something wrong with the median and it's like bulging into the wrong lane. But with lupus, I mean, it's just the whole body is like systemic. It's like you just got to get that venom in there. It may not matter exactly. It's not as important for her where you sting. Whereas with the back eye, you want to sting very locally where he's having the problem. But with her, you know, you have to pretty much sting all over, you know. So, but, I mean, you would choose the points based, you know, on some of the meridians. She might look through the book and say, like, gee, I really see, you know, that I'm an earth person. I'm a very much of a caretaker. I'm very nurturing. I definitely see myself as an earth person. So then you might want to sting on the stomach and the spleen because those are the pathways that go with the earth. So that's the advantage of getting the book is that you can actually, it helps you decide where to sting if someone has something systemic, whereas if they have just, you know, back pain, you sting where it hurts. It might be a little more effective if you stung in an acupuncture point near where it hurts, but, you know, it's not as key in when it's just pain. You don't have to be right on an acupuncture point. You can be close to the area, and you can still get good results. But with something with like an autoimmune disease, it's kind of like let's say even just an ulcer, which is, you know, where the body's attacking the lining of the stomach. So if you sting on the stomach pathway and the body has to go to that bee venom and break it down and, you know, and heat up the area and then dilute it so you've got the redness and the swelling and the itching, but the body's working really hard to break down that bee venom, I'm telling you, the body doesn't have time to attack the lining of the stomach because the bee venom is an emergency. Attacking the lining of the stomach is just a bad habit that the body's decided to do. But when you've got an emergency, you know, when you've got a poison, the body's going to go there. So for that period of time, for those maybe a couple of days, that bee venom is still there in the body, that body is not breaking down the myelin sheath or whatever it does in lupus or whatever, you know, is doing in the stomach lining. You know, anybody who has an autoimmune disease, the body's attacking itself. So if you give it something else to attack, like the bee venom, you're tricking the body to attack the bee venom and to break it down and to dilute it and make it go away, and the body doesn't have time to break down the myelin sheath or you know, go through the blood-brain barrier and make somebody very ill. Do you see what I'm saying? It's kind of like a decoy. You're actually manipulating the body into healing itself and not breaking itself down because it's too busy breaking down the bee venom it doesn't have the energy to break down anything else.
So well, and that leads to another question I'm kind of curious about. The girl that I'm, you know, going to get married to eventually, she's been having problems with her appendix flaring up.
Hmm.
Now it won't flare up enough to where they'll take it out.
Yeah.
But you know, every few months there's flare ups, and you know she's curled up in pain with it. I was wondering if there was anything you could possibly do for that.
Well, the appendix is a vestal part. This vestal organ that we, you know, supposedly don't use anymore, but it's still there, and sort of like the tonsils. Sometimes they just take them out these days, but really they're there for a reason, you know. And you could actually sting if she's having pain with the when she has the flare-up, or you could even do it at a time when she's not having the flare-up, and you could try to prevent the flare-ups. But I would probably sting in the area where she normally has the pain, on the front, on the, you know, kind of to the right of her belly button or something, you know, poke around there, see if there are any some sore spots there. The other thing you could think of is, you know, the two organs that are in that area are like the small intestine and the large intestine. And so from an acupuncture standpoint, you could look at those meridians and where they are. But at the beginning, you know, for her, you know, since we want to stay on the trunk of the body, meaning the torso, meaning definitely not the arms and legs, especially people who are, you know, if they're beekeepers, then you can do whatever you want. People who are used to getting stung. But if they're not beekeepers and you're doing this on purpose to help someone get well, they're not going to cotton to, you know, they're not going to be so interested in all this swelling and itching and it driving them crazy and keeping them up and they can't sleep. So you want to stay on the trunk of the body. Now, in the case of this person with the appendix problem, you can sting right in her abdomen area. The body will go there. This is really interesting. If you did it when she's not having a flare-up, and now you want to, anybody who doesn't want to get stung, you want to ice them up real good. So I don't care if it's a can of orange juice that's been in the freezer or a bag of peas, or you can get those ice packs that you use for picnics that you put in the freezer, you know, and you numb the area with an ice pack. You put the ice pack right on her abdomen, normally where she has the pain, and you get it real good and numb and very cold to the point where she can't stand it anymore, and then you do a test sting. You just sting her, and you take the stinger out right away, and you wait 15 minutes, and as long as she's not allergic, you could do a couple of more stings if she wants, or you don't have to. You could wait a couple of more days. But basically what you're going to do is you're going to have the body go to that area, break down the bee venom. And I don't know if you were at the beginning of this call, but at the beginning I said it's like a cursor on a computer. You're telling the body, go here, break down this bee venom right where I put the cursor, which is the bee sting and the venom, okay? So break down this bee venom right here, and then as an afterthought, the body says, well, let me just see what else is going on here that I can just kind of clean up. As an afterthought, the body's going to clean up that appendix problem. You see what I'm saying? Because, you know, the body has gone to sleep like Rip Van Winkle, and so what we're doing with the bee sting is we're waking it up. And so if the body goes to an area to clean up the bee venom, and that area has another problem, as an afterthought, the body will go, well, as long as I'm here, you know, I'll just clean this up too. So, I mean, if you think about it, like we're all coming into maybe mud season, those of us who have had snow or even just anywhere where you have springtime, you'll have a mud season. So let's say in your laundry room, you have a utility room or something, and maybe you have dogs and they track mud in, or they, you know, and the floor is dirty, but not enough, like you said about the woman with the appendix, not enough to take it out. But there's something going on. So like the floor in the laundry room is dirty, but not dirty enough to take the time to, I think I'm going to mop. But you have mud season, you have a really big bad mud season, and that floor is filthy. All of a sudden, you decide to take out that mop and you're going to clean it up. And what you're going to get is the mud that was just tracked in that day, but you're also going to get the dirt that was there for the last 2 months that you were feeling kind of too lazy to clean up. It wasn't that important. So that's what happens when you sting somebody with a bee in an area where they have a chronic problem. The body's gotten used to, this is my chronic problem. It happens from time to time. My back goes out or my appendix, you know, flares up or whatever. But it's like I'm used to it and it's no big deal. But if all of a sudden, you know, you get bee venom in that area and the body has to go there to clean up the bee venom, it's like, all right, as long as I'm here, I'll just fix the back pain and I'll just fix the appendix while I'm here. You know, as long as I've gone to the store, I may as well do a really big shopping. you know, because I've already gone to the store, if you follow me. So it's kind of like we're tricking the body. We're telling the body where to go. And sometimes we have it go exactly where the pain is. And other times we might put, you know, put the bee sting in stomach 36 for Mickey's, you know, dog, because that dog is having problems on the stomach pathway. You see what I'm saying? So sometimes we choose a spot because we like the name of the point or because that's what they really need. And sometimes we go to that spot because that's where the pain is. So it's like an art. It's like, you know, and, you know, if you try something, it doesn't work, then don't give up. Just try something else. Keep going until you hit on a solution that works for you. And with everybody, it's going to be different. Sometimes you're going to sting where it hurts. Like if you have a whiplash, somebody was talking about whiplash, and you just give yourself a few stings and the pain in the neck goes away. And I had that bladder infection that just wouldn't go away with Western medicine, and I didn't sting on the bladder meridian. I just stung right in the pubic hair. And believe me, I was higher than a kite. I was flying. I was so happy, and it was like I was drunk. I was like, it was my first bee stings, you know. But that, believe it or not, that bladder pain, that entire bladder infection went away, and it had been there for 2 or 3 months, and that was my initiation into bee venom therapy, you know. And they did the stings right where I was having the problem. So sometimes you want to go where the problem is, and other times you don't, you know. And so, but if somebody has a systemic problem like lupus or chronic fatigue or MS or HIV or something that's really all over the map, you know, and you don't know where to go first, then it almost doesn't matter where you sting, really, you know, because you got to get that venom in there, and you got to get the person to have their healing crisis, and then you can start to work with them. So.
Well, I thank you very much. You've been very, very, very informative.
Oh, well, I you can tell I really love my subject matter, and I could go on forever because I've learned so much, and I just want to pass it on because the truth is, you know, it hurts to just have so much knowledge and not be able to have a forum and a way to share it. I wish I could just start a school and just teach people how to do it because it's so fabulous and it's so low tech, you know, we can have these kind of conferences on the phone, or we could do something on the internet where, you know, or maybe at some point anybody who's good at doing videos, we could, you know, I could do a workshop and we could videotape it, and then we could get it out there and people could have it in their beekeeper's library and just check it out, you know, and just rent, you know, borrow it or something, because, you know, we just need to pass the information on to the next generation of beekeepers, you know, because that's how it was passed on to me. It was like a gift. You know, Charlie Mraz gave me the gift, and I just want to pass it on, and it really hurts not to be able to pass it on. To have information and not be able to share it is actually painful, you know, because it's like I have so much to give, and I just want to give it. And that's a perfect example of the earth element. It's like Mother Earth. It's like somebody, you know, who just wants to nurse that baby and just doesn't want to stop nursing, you know. It's just like, it's just you want to give away the store. And not everybody's built like that. Not every, you know, some people are into other things. But as Rob said at the beginning, it's like, it's never been about money for me. It's not, you know, I just want to help people. And I became a beekeeper, although I don't have hives right now, and I'm not a very good beekeeper, but I became a beekeeper through the back door only because I wanted to help people. And I'm always looking for new things that work. So if I find something else good, I'll pass that on too, you know. So, but I really appreciate your being on this conference call, and all of you who maybe aren't even saying anything but are enjoying it, you know. It's really a gift to me to be able to share it, because I have so much knowledge, and I need a forum. I need, you know, and I want to thank Rob, you know, for creating this time for me to be able to share, because you guys are from probably all over the country. I mean, some of you sound like you have like southern accents. I don't know where you're from, but, you know, there are probably people calling in from all different parts of the South maybe or something. And, you know, we may not agree on anything else but bees, but that's okay. You know, I just want to help people get well, and I want to keep bees alive on the planet, and I think we all could vote for that. So.
Emma?
Yeah.
Any way you want to get your message out, I'll help you. Okay, this is Rob Russell.
Okay, well.
You want a forum? You got it. Whatever you want, okay?
I'd love to have a radio show where people could just, like, call in and I would just answer the questions, you know? And this is kind of, that's what this is like. It's like a radio show, right? I mean.
It's exactly like a radio show.
Maybe there are only 10 people on it right now, but, you know, I'd be happy to talk to 1,000 people.
Well, you will end up talking to 1,000 people before 5 months.
Okay.
You'll talk
because they'll
to more than 1,000 once
podcast.
You're out.
Yeah.
What's that?
She'll talk to more than 1,000.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Just for starters, you go on about 12 different websites just for beekeeping.
Oh, okay.
I mean, right. I've got Wallace, Santiago Wallace here. You're on his blog. Of course, you're on Rob's blog.
Okay.
You're on the two major beekeeping forums. You're on WPN. And, Rob, I know you got what we – she's going to Linda's blog and just several other places.
Well, at one point they flew me down to Mexico, and they had 5,000 people there, and they had a copy of my speech in advance, and they had translators. And they were translating my speech as I spoke. And somebody said to me, God, if your book was in Spanish, you know, I mean, every single person there would have gotten it. And so, you know, I'm totally up for if anybody knows people who can translate it into other languages. And, you know, I'm even willing to donate the money just to keep beekeeping going in the United States or all around the world. I mean, again, it's really not about the money. It's about keeping the bees alive. And helping people get well and helping people really, you know, appreciate what bees do on this planet, too. I think we take bees, a lot of people, not you guys, but a lot of people take bees for granted and, you know, or maybe they're scared of bees. And
Amber,
they just need education.
Would it be all right if I had Rob put you on as a link to my wildlife page?
Absolutely, yeah. My website. You can, if anybody knows how to do it, it's just foreveramberrose.com. And you can whoever knows how to go in there and do it. Actually, there's a, you know, Rob Overton, there's this fellow, James Alton Thomas, who's the Southeast president of the beekeepers here in New York and New Jersey and Pennsylvania. And he told me he would help me update my website. So maybe he can help us. You know, do anybody who wants to have my website linking to something else, I'm totally for it, you know, because and if you know somebody who has questions about bees, believe me, I get emails and phone calls every day. I mean, not as much now since I wrote the book because people can buy the book and they can kind of read it and all. But when I first started, I couldn't even get through dinner without the phone ringing off the hook. That's why I wrote the book. Because my son kept saying, Mom, we can't have dinner without the phone ringing, you know. So because people would call me, where do I sting for this and that? And once I get started, it's hard for me to stop. So that's the only reason I wrote the book was so that I could, you know, I could have dinner. But, but you know, if people have questions, if people want to email me, they can go on my website and they can just, at the bottom of every page of my website, they can just click. And there's, you know, they can send me an email, and I'll answer their questions. And they
Amber?
Can call me as well. Mm-hmm.
Rob, do you think you could do that for me?
Yeah, it's pretty easy. You do a remake anyways.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Yeah,
just let me know.
Anybody who is interested, maybe if they're listening to this or if you know anybody who's interested, they can just go to my website and then just send me an email that they want to have a link, and maybe James Alton Thomas or maybe Rob Overton or whoever is very – I'm not very computer savvy. I'm not really good on the computer.
Neither
am
I. That's why I asked Rob.
Yeah, but though, you know, we just can share our skills and you know, help each other out. But I know there are a lot of beekeeping clubs, you know, that might be interested in if at some point – if I'm going to do this 15-hour certification course this spring, probably we're going to do it down in Middletown, and you know, where you first met me, I think, Rob Overton. And James Alton Thomas said that we could do it down there at the Cornell Extension, and if we have do a 15-hour certification class, maybe if we can get somebody who has video equipment, we can make a video of it and then make a video available so that people can borrow it and watch me doing the stinging, you know, so they don't have to actually, if they live far away and they can't get to the workshop, they can actually see it.
Right.
Amber?
Middletown is on 17, isn't it? No.
Yeah.
Or is
Amber.
It 143?
Yeah. So it's kind of in the middle of the state, but I mean, if there are enough people up near Utica or Colgate or wherever you're from, you know, I'll come there. If there are enough people, if we can get, usually it takes about 10 or 15 people. I think the last workshop I did, I think we had almost 20 people here in my living room. And Rob supplied the beefies, you know.
Well,
and then we had another
beef.
Little clinic. We had about 5 or 6 people, and Rob supplied the bees for that. And Mickey brought his dogs, and I stung about 5 or 6 people. And so, you know, I'm willing to show people how to do it. My goal is not to keep it all to myself. My goal is to share it, because it's, you know, it's painful if you have information and you don't have a way of getting it to the people who need it. It hurts, you know.
Yes.
It's like I have a secret, but I don't want to keep it a secret anymore. It's like I have all this knowledge and I just want to get it out there. So any way that you can help me, you can tell people about it, or we can rebroadcast. People can click on this podcast and hear this conversation. And then if they have questions, they can email me, go on my website, and then they can email me with their questions. Or we could do, down the road, we could do another podcast that would be more advanced, you know, and we could get more people interested, you know, with more questions. People who were here tonight might say, listen, I really had a great evening. Let's do it again in 3 months, and I'll bring more people to the next podcast, and then we'll have a bigger group.
Well, we have an area here, up here in central New York, the Empire, Mid-York Beekeepers.
Okay.
They have been doing training sessions in beekeeping.
Okay.
And the president of the club, the last meeting I went to, I've been ill, so I can't say for sure, was Ken Boyce. So if that name pops up on your thing,
okay,
Ken
I'll
Boyce.
Know it from you. And what is your name?
My name is Robert Evans. I run Live Trapping by Matt.
Oh, okay.
And I do some very strange things.
Well, I'll tell you, a lot of people think me stinging people with bees was pretty strange, too. You know, a lot of circles that I was running in was thinking I was into witchcraft, you know. But it's an old folk remedy. It's not something new, and I didn't make it up. You know, I'm just somebody handed it to me on a silver platter, and I just want to hand it to other people. You know, I just want to give it away because it is so powerful. And these bees that, as I said, aerodynamically are too heavy to fly, they're magical. They
yes.
can work magic. And there was a fellow from Pennsylvania who came to Middletown when I first met, I think it was Mickey and Rob Overton who were on this call. And he didn't, you know, he and his wife were sitting in the front row, and they were asking a lot of questions. And I was thinking, oh, boy, you know, I'm going to get off topic, and I'm going to run out of time. But I'll tell you something. By the end of it, this man had cancer, and he's totally cancer-free. And he wasn't even sure what to do, but he didn't want to do the chemo anymore. And what he did was he went to his hives, and he just stuck his hand in the hives a couple of times a week. That was 3 years ago. They gave him like 2 or 3 weeks to live, and he's still alive. He is still alive, and all he's been doing is stinging himself with bees, and he didn't even know what. He was making it up as he went along. He just kept putting his hand in the hive and letting the bees sting him wherever. But what he didn't know was on the index finger and on the thumb are the meridians for the lungs and the large intestine, and he had colon cancer.
Ah.
And he had problems with his lungs. So by using his sting in his hands, he was actually getting to the lungs and the colon, which is where the cancer was. And now he's totally cancer-free. And it almost looked like I had paid him to come to that meeting because it was almost too good to be true.
I was just going to say, that was the first meeting, and he sat right in the front, came in after the meeting started, and it was like, whoa. But, I mean, I was there, and he came to the workshop and stuff, and I can tell, I mean, it is, you know, it's sincere. It was no setup.
It was not a setup, and I said to him, every time I give a workshop, I want you to come, because you are more powerful than I. People are going to believe you. They're not going to believe me, because I didn't cure myself of cancer. I had a bladder infection, and I had some neck pain. But, I mean, that's nothing compared to cancer, you know. So, I mean, he was really, you know, I mean, he's an amazing human being.
I feel I better warn you, because I get down into your area once in a while.
Okay. Well, you come visit me, because I'm in Woodstock.
You better look at my website so you know who I am.
All right.
I get down, well, I've been down to Hudson two or three different times. I never know when I'm going to go. I do some strange work in some strange places.
Okay, well, I'm not too far from Hudson, so.
No, I realize that now.
So when you're feeling up to it, you could just shoot me an email that you're going to be coming down my way, and we can just have coffee together.
Well, I have to have tea anymore, but that's...
Okay, tea.
I have tea with honey.
Oh, hey, honey, yeah. Yeah. Well, we can have plenty of tea.
I find that the honey is very gentle on the stomach, and it with the other problems I'm having, and it's just very soothing.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, all the bee products are really, really amazing.
Yes.
They all have that magical quality of an insect that is too heavy to fly and somehow has learned to fly. Something we haven't.
Yeah.
I mean, we can make airplanes, and we can even fly them into the World Trade Center, but we haven't learned how to fly ourselves.
No.
So we must need to learn something from the bees here, because they seem to be doing something we can't do. I mean, we can build machines to fly, but we haven't learned to fly ourselves. And until we learn to fly, we need to pay a little more attention to those bees. But all the honeybee products are fabulous. And so I will be very clear about this, that something you'll hear people say, well, I do apitherapy, or I'm an apitherapist. AP is Latin for bee. Apis, you know, is Latin for bee. But an apitherapist, if in the strict term, would mean all the honeybee products, not just the venom.
Yes.
But sometimes people will say, I'm an apitherapist, and they really mean they just use the venom. But I am very big on, I encourage people to do royal jelly and pollen and propolis and honey and, you know, everything. You know, even, I love chewing honeycomb, and I love chewing the wax, you know.
My father, who is 88, takes honey and apple cider vinegar every day.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Jarvis, good old Dr. Jarvis in the, you know, Vermont folk medicine. Yeah.
He's 88 years old, and
mm-hmm.
he is having problems, age-related, but still.
He's doing
come
pretty
on.
Well. Well, I'll tell you this, that Charlie Mraz, who was really my first teacher from Vermont, he was a beekeeper for a long time. He started off in Brooklyn, New York, and then he moved up to Middlebury, Vermont, and... You know, he really thought that arthritis was something that old people just complained about. He didn't believe in it until he got rheumatic fever. And then he got, you know, rheumatoid arthritis. And his knee was so bad that he felt like he wanted to just saw off his leg in the middle of the night. It's just he was in so much pain. And one day he was a beekeeper, but he never stung himself in the knee, you know, on purpose. And he woke up the next morning with no pain. And he went the next 65 years without any pain in that knee, and he never had to sting it again. So, and then he just couldn't keep his mouth shut, and then he was stinging other people. But, you know, he's, you know, basically it's really powerful. But what I was going to say is that he was a big one. He knew Dr. Jarvis, and Dr. Jarvis had this book called Vermont Folk Medicine, and he was very big on the apple cider vinegar and honey. And some people call it honeyger. And it's you know, you don't do it straight. It's not like straight vinegar and honey. You dilute it
with
but
water.
But
sometimes a little cinnamon or ginger.
Right, and that's really good for digestion as well. And Charlie carried that around with him in a water bottle wherever he went. We went to China. We went to Phoenix, Arizona, to collect bee venom or to go to a conference. And Charlie always had that vinegar and apple cider vinegar and the honey. And he called it honeyger.
Yep.
Is what he did, and he just he drank it all the time instead of water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you want, we can you can come over and we can have that. But if you're in my area, you know, definitely come and look me up, and I'll give you some tips, and you can pick up the book if you want it, if you're going to be down this way anytime soon. And that
well,
way
I have I never know.
Yeah,
as I say, my calls come when my calls come in, I have to go. Okay. That's
all right. Well, if you're down in my area, just let me know because I will make time for you.
Right now, I've got a. I'm waiting to go out to Jamestown, so. Olean, out in that area.
Right.
So, you just never know where I'm going to be.
Okay.
Strange work.
Right. All right. Well, as long as you enjoy what you're doing, though.
Yeah. Well, I do, and we also like Rob. I'm a bee remover. I do live removals.
Uh huh. That's great. And then you put the hot you take the queen and you take those bees and you put them someplace into a hive.
I put them where they can be productive without causing problems.
Instead of inside somebody's wall or something.
Right.
Boy.
And I've got a son that I've
trained to
do this, and I've helped a few guys on the internet learn how to do it.
Yeah. It's a fabulous skill to have.
Well, that's one of the reasons I was asking about being stung so bad. Once in a while, you get into these bad situations.
Yeah.
Not very often, but it does happen.
Well, you're not, you know, it's not your typical beekeeping situation. It's
no,
like
no, no.
When Charlie and I used to collect venom, and he would take an electric board that he would run current through, and he would put it on top of the hive. I can't tell you how many bees he killed like that, but, you know, I mean, but they would be so furious with us, and we would have, I mean, even Charlie wore a suit then, and we would have those orange space suits. It looked like you were out in space. Like we were like the Michelin man, and we had these orange, gigantic, big orange suits, and, you know,
BJ Sheriff's.
Yeah. And we would wear, you know, the waterproof, you know, boots up to our knees and put tape around so they couldn't get in. But when you're collecting venom like that and you're basically electrocuting the bees and you're killing them while they're doing it, then you make them really mad and the whole hive comes after you. And you better be protected and you better have your EpiPens there. But, you know, I did that for a week in Arizona with him. And it was pretty scary, but probably I think the scariest thing, my initiation, was driving with three hives in Charlie's old station wagon from Vermont to Bethesda, Maryland, in basically one day. And the hives were he was supposed to wrap them up with the you know whatever it is that silver wrap that you know that holds the hive together, and they came loose. And I was driving, and I think I wasn't sure which I was more afraid of, the bees or the brakes, because it was an old station wagon with bad steering and bad brakes. And I just decided I couldn't be scared of two things at once. And so I decided to be more, I focused on the car and the steering of the car. But the bees were all over. And at one point, we had to stop to use the restroom, and we got some coffee or something. And when we came back, the windows were just from the inside, and there were people. It was like something out of Alfred Hitchcock's movie. You know, people were staring and thought we were just totally crazy. At a certain point, I mean, we just had to open up the windows because we couldn't see. You know, we had the windshield wipers going because we just couldn't see out the windows to get where we were going, and we didn't get home to my house until 11 o'clock at night, and we left those hives in the car. And then in the morning, he took them outside on a hand truck.
I did something similar to that with a swarm, and I took off with it. Unfortunately, I forgot to close the vent on the nuke box, and it was in my wife's little – my truck had broken down. I'd taken her little escort wagon, and I was riding through the city of Rome, and people kept pointing at the car, and I – you know, I wasn't thinking too much. I had my bee suit still on. I thought they were pointing at that.
Yeah.
And finally, I looked up in the mirror, and the whole back of the car was just absolutely full of bees.
Just covered,
Oh, yeah, inside, all the windows. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah.
Never got stung once.
Yeah, we had that on about a 14-hour drive, and I just, you know, that was really my initiation, and I did not get even one sting.
No.
It was really
quite
amazing, and
gentle.
I was not wearing a suit either, but, I mean, we weren't collecting venom, so we didn't make them angry, but it's just that they got loose in the car, and there was nothing we could do, and we had to just keep on going. Because I actually had 30 people coming to my house the next day and wanted to be stung by Charlie, so I had to get there.
Yes.
You know, it wasn't like I could just stop at a hotel and we could sleep over. I mean, we had to keep on pushing and keep on going all the way from Vermont to Maryland. And to
it's remarkable some of the things that bees will do.
Yeah.
And never get riled up when they're riding like that.
No, I didn't get one sting, and he would just gently brush them off me and. I was wearing all white. I was being very careful to wear white, you know, but I was not wearing a bee suit, and I did not get one sting.
Well,
not a one. And I was just, I kept my focus on the steering and the brakes because I felt like, you know, I couldn't be scared of the bees and the car at the same time, and I just decided if we were in an accident, I'd probably have more trouble with the bees than I was having now. So the most important thing was just getting there safely. And we, from time to time, we split it up, and he drove part of the way, and I drove part of the way. But, you know, we got there in one piece.
Yeah.
I got his three best. He gave me his three best.
People think that bees are so ferocious.
Mm-mm.
And really, they're a gentle creature. As long as you're not trying to kill them and destroy their hive.
Right.
They're a very, very gentle creature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are.
I have a lot of respect for the bee.
Well,
this has been a very enlightened conversation. I'm so happy that I didn't make a mistake and I could cut in on this phone tonight.
I'm really glad that you set the time aside, you know.
Well,
and I'm really glad that Rob set it up. And for those who are still on this call, you know, you know, bees are really amazing, and probably most of you are beekeepers or have something to do with bees, and maybe not people who are, you know, have an illness who are just calling and know nothing about bees. But I will say this, that the bees survived Hiroshima. We dropped bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and those bees survived. I don't know how they did it. All I can think of is it was the propolis that just they kept the hive sterile. They just closed it up. But if they can survive an atomic bomb, how come they're dying now? That's what's scaring me. That's what's scaring me because, you know, we have to find out why, and we have to solve it because it's not acceptable. acceptable from my perspective, and I'm just one human being who has a lot of respect for bees, but it just is absolutely unacceptable for these bees to be dying.
You mentioned the propolis. You do realize in Europe they use that as a salve for radiation burns, don't you?
Yes, they do. They do. And isn't that interesting? And the honey, too. They're using honey bandages.
Yes.
They were doing honey
bandages. They're using honey for deep infections.
Yeah. Actually, bacteria cannot live in honey.
No.
And that's why honey works so well in closing up wounds and healing bed scores and things like that. And I will tell you about something else which is very hard to get in the United States, but we have a friend that goes to China once a year because he's married to a Chinese woman. And they bring back this moist, exposed burn ointment that has honey and beeswax and earthworms in it and sesame oil. And it is the best thing that I know for burns is that burn ointment. And you just put it right on, and it's very inexpensive, really. It's, you know, it's something like $10 a tube, I think, or something. I mean, it's, you know, it's like peanuts. I mean, and it's like the tube lasts a very long time, but they use it for burn patients who've been severely burned, and you don't use all that silver nitrate. And I will tell you a story that when my husband and I first got married, we had one of these Italian coffee makers that, you know, where the water comes up into the top, spouts up. And he turned around just at the moment and that he, I guess, either didn't have enough water in there. Something went wrong. And the cap just flew open and burned his face. And the first thing I went for was my Mebo, moist exposed burn ointment. We did go to the doctor. We got him an antibiotic, but we didn't use the silver nitrate, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a very bad scar and scabbing at the beginning. He has absolutely no scars now. If you didn't know, you wouldn't know. But his face was completely scarred. He was scalded just by that hot coffee,
mm-hmm.
that hot water just coming out from the spout, and it just exploded in his face. And it was probably the scariest moment of my life. It was just him, you know, and him telling me he was okay when I knew he really wasn't.
Yeah.
And he was like in shock. And we immediately went to one of these, you know, jack-in-the-box doctors, you know. Like, I didn't even take the time to go to the emergency room because it was too far away. And we just I put the moist exposed burn ointment on him, the Mebo cream, and we kept using it for a week or two. And we took pictures and everything, and he has not a scar on him now from that experience. And so that's a very good thing. I mean, but the propolis is very good for anything to do with the skin.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if the fellow is still on, or if we can get the information to him whose fiance had the appendix problem, are you still there with us?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. I would have her see if she can get some propolis in capsules or mixed with honey. That's very good for the intestines to actually eat propolis mixed with honey or royal jelly. There are various companies that make it, or you can sometimes get it in capsules. You have to be a little careful with it because depending on the company, they say when they're scraping it out of the hive, sometimes they get the paint, the lead paint with it.
Yes.
So you have to be careful which company, where you get it from, or if you can get it from your own hive and you don't get any of that lead paint there. It's really good for any kind of mucous membrane problems, anything to do with the intestines, irritable bowel syndrome, small intestine problems, ulcers. Oh, speaking of ulcers, come to think of it, Manuka honey from New
mm-hmm.
Zealand has something in it that's antibacterial that destroys the H. pylori bacteria. And so Manuka honey is very, very expensive, but you can get it in the health food store, and it's incredible for stomach ulcers that are caused by that H. pylori. It will kill it.
And for the people that have got their own hives, they want to harvest the propolis, if you're going to do it for yourself, because there's a very small amount of it,
yeah.
on the underside of the frame ears, if you do, as long as you don't have any frame rests in there, if you've got plain wooden cleats on the inside of your hive, you will find that the propolis on the sides of your frame and on that little spot on the ear holds the most propolis and is the most beneficial if you're going to harvest it for yourself. It'll also be the cleanest.
Yeah. You do have to be careful.
But those are the areas.
That's good. That's good to know.
Just a good place to collect it from,
mm-hmm.
instead of trying to collect it off the side of the wood.
Yeah.
The big chunks are always on the side of the box, but the best is always on the frame.
Mm-hmm. Right. I love that smell. I love
I hate to get it on my shoes, though. My wife kills me while I'm tracking the house.
Oh, my God. I love the fumes. I love the smell of propolis. I just love that smell. There's something, it's very magical. You know,
yes.
They make perfume. They probably do, but somebody's making perfume out of it, you know.
You speak about that, Amber. What I did was, you know, they sell those, you have those little candle things, and you put these, like, scented wax things in top.
Right.
Yep.
Well, my wife had one of those. I actually put propolis in the top and let the candle heat that, and then the aroma just goes through the whole house.
It is so delicious.
Oh, boy.
Boy, that is really, that's a great idea.
That's a real good idea, Rob.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Even my wife would go for that.
It's very good for gum problems, for wound, anything to do with the skin and the gums and your whole digestive tract. So if you're having a problem with irritable bowel, and at one point, you know, this friend of mine, I'm just going to mention his name now, Michael Simich. If you go to, I think it's bvenom.com or if you type in Michael Simich or even email me and I'll give you his name, because it's spelled in a funny way. He's from Hungary, but he was saying in Europe they mix propolis with chocolate, and they use it as something as a laxative. It just goes through the digestive tract instead of, you know, sort of like they used to make chocolate Ex-Lax or something. Well,
mm-hmm.
they do it with propolis in Europe. I mean, they're so far ahead of us, you know, and in Russia, I mean, they're just miles ahead of us. They're so far ahead of us, really, when it comes to using the bee products.
Like I said before, we've forgotten more than we know.
Yeah, they actually used to have women there with their white aprons on, you know, just maybe wives of the beekeepers or just people, and they would just sit and milk the venom out of the sac. They would just sit there and just milk that venom. And in Germany, you can't get it anymore, but there was this wonderful cream called Forapin E Salba, a salve, and it had in each tube, it had the venom from 300 bees. It's really, really good for things like arthritis, but it's not good enough. It's not strong enough for lupus or, you know, anything that's like chronic fatigue or anything that's like MS, you know, that's a systemic autoimmune disease. It's not strong enough. You really need the live bees. But a lot of people are really into bee venom injections, and there are a few people doing that, but I don't have the license to inject, so I actually can't. I'm not an MD, but I'm just a big proponent of the live bee stings, because it's the way God made the venom, and you're not mixing it with anything else. It's just the way it comes out. It's the most natural. It's like the difference between eating a raw apple and applesauce. You know, it's once you start tinkering with some of these things, you know, especially if you start tinkering with it in a laboratory and the pharmaceuticals get a hold of it. There is one double-blind study there are a couple of them, but there's one going on right now in New Jersey, and I'm not real happy about it, but and I'm sure some pharmaceutical company is going to, you know, buy it up, but there is a physician who lives in Korea now, but he comes back and forth, and he used to sting people a lot or do injectable venom. But now he mostly is in Korea. But he's doing this clinical trial in New Jersey. And it's about seventh year, and he said he maybe has seven more years to go. And I said, well, you've got FDA approval in Korea. Why do you need to have the U.S. FDA approval? I mean, why don't you just stay in Korea and help the people there? You know, because it costs so much money to bring something like this to market, and then, you know, they're going to just put their own tag on it and, you know, sell it. But, you know, but he wants that Nobel Prize. He wants to be able to help MS. And I said, well, why don't you do it in Korea? You already have it approved. And he said, there's no MS in Korea, which I didn't know. Or they don't call it that. They just call it arthritis. So that's why he's doing it in America, because we call it MS. And if he can find something that will help it and go through the clinical trials, you know, he wants that Nobel Prize. I mean, Charlie Moran said to me that I was his Nobel Prize because I was combining it with the acupuncture. So I already feel like I got my Nobel Prize. I don't need anything more. I just need to tell people about it to keep it going, because one day, like Charlie, I'm not going to be here. And I want, you know, I need to tell as many people as possible, because someday I'm not going to be here. And all my knowledge is going to go down the drain. So that's why I wrote the book, and that's why I try to keep writing and keep talking to people about it, because I don't want the bees to die, and I don't want this therapy to die either, you know. And it's a folk medicine, and it needs to just be passed down. It's kind of like an oral tradition where people just take notes and they just kind of pass it on to their kids. It's like an apprenticeship, you know. And that's how acupuncture used to be. It was before they had schools and everything. They just had apprentices, you know.
Before they made it more complicated.
Right. Yeah. Before they made it more complicated, you know. And now they're charging $40,000 to go to acupuncture school.
Yeah.
You know, but it used to be that you were an apprentice and you would sweep the acupuncturist's floor and you would make tea for him, and that's how you learned. You know, long before you
put
needles in people and you were being taught anything, you just emptied the garbage, you know. And that's how beekeepers, you know, start off. You probably apprenticed with somebody else. I mean, somebody was probably your teacher at one point, you know, and that person is someone you never forgot. And so Charlie was my teacher, and I'm just trying to, you know, pass on what I learned from him. And then, you know, people will pass what I'm teaching on to their kids or their friends and just keep on passing it on, because then it really becomes the people's medicine. And then it's in the culture, and then it's, you know, and then it's on every street corner. You know, instead of cigarettes or candy bars or whatever, it's the, you know, then people get excited because it's the bees and it's the magic of the bees. And then people start learning to respect bees because we have a lot to learn.
Certainly. Amber?
Yeah.
Can you spend a few minutes and talk about scar tissue?
Oh, God, thank you so much. Scar tissue. There are certain things that block energy, and scars are one of them. And I actually had that circled, and I've sort of put down all my notes, and I'm just going stream of consciousness. But that was on my notes to bring up, that if you've got a major scar somewhere, and it doesn't, I don't care where it is, and but most people have like lots of scars, especially the older we are, you know, like if we had, you know, scars, if we had our appendix out, we have a big scar. You know, or if you had heart surgery, you have a scar, or your gallbladder taken out, you have a scar. So you got to sting on the scar and around it, and you've got to keep stinging. And in general, when you sting on scar tissue, it doesn't hurt. But also, if you've got a scar, you've got adhesions inside the body where you can't see. So you need to be stinging all around that scar tissue. If you can see a scar on the outside, I can guarantee you at least 3 inches out from that scar, all the way around in a circle around that scar, you're going to have adhesions on the inside of the body. And I've had people who've had, and when I say I don't really mean me, it's because it's the bees that are doing it, but there was one woman that came to me, and she had a couple C-sections, and then she had some abdominal surgery, and they just kept going through the same scar. And she developed keloids. And keloids are when scars become real big and like bumpy and look real ugly and, you know, look almost inflamed, or maybe if they're not red, they're at least, they just look ugly. And, you know, we took pictures of the scars before, and then we started stinging on the scar, around it, above, below, and those keloids went away. Those scars went, if you keep stinging, those scars will disappear, and you'll have regular skin tissue that you won't even be able to see that scar. If you sting it enough, it'll go away. It'll disappear, which is really amazing. But the important thing, it's not just a beauty contest, you know, like somebody wants to wear a bikini, so we want to sting the scar so the scar doesn't show. It's really more about getting well, because if you've got a scar, if anybody cuts into your body, it's going to cut through all those acupuncture meridians, and you've got to heal that up, because otherwise there's a blockage. It's just like, I don't care whether you're from Florida or you're from New York, who's ever on this call with me, you know, there's a freeway, there's a highway. You know, in Florida, you've got your highways, the Alligator Alley, and you've got all your highways. In New York, we have the Thruway, you know, and we have, somebody brought up Route 17. I mean, you've got highways, you know, that cut across your state. And if you've got a scar, you've got a scar cutting across your body. And it's cutting across all your acupuncture meridians, and it's going to prevent you from getting well. So stinging on the scar and around it, and following, you know, taking a look in my book or in any acupuncture book and seeing where the acupuncture meridians are, and taking a look at where your scar or your friend's scar is, and seeing which meridians was cut across there, you definitely want to sting that scar. And guess what? The belly button is everybody's first scar, because when we were born, we had our umbilical cord cut. And so that's the very first scar. So everybody's got a scar. So that's a place where you could actually sting, right in your belly button.
Well, that hurts on the belly button, dear.
Yeah, I bet it does. Charlie once told me a story. He was on a trip somewhere, and he woke up, he was in a hotel somewhere, and he had a jar of bees somewhere under the bed, and I don't know, he woke up and they were on his private parts. He got stung, and I'll tell you something, you know, if you're a beekeeper, you're going to get stung all over the place. So,
you know, and it really does hurt. But
yeah,
I don't know, for me, probably my worst stinging experience, you know, getting stung accidentally, not really on purpose, is in the fingers. I find it very, I don't like getting stung on my fingers.
Between the fingers.
Well, or even like on my pinky. Like, I was cleaning out an old hive, and I was telling Rob earlier, there were no bees alive in that hive. I mean, I was just cleaning out the hive body, and I was just, you know, cleaning it out.
Uh-huh.
And there were some dead bees in there. And they sting. They still will sting you, even if they're dead. If the stinger mechanism is still intact, you just brush up against it, and you get stung. And so I got stung several times on my pinky, and it started swelling. And it was like I couldn't even drive a car, you know, and I couldn't sleep. I had to keep like an ice pack, and as soon as the ice melted, I would just have to wake up. And, you know, I slept with my hand in a, you know, bag of ice all night long for 3 nights. But, I mean, if you're stinging your fingers because you have arthritis there, you know, you're doing it on purpose.
Yeah.
But if you accidentally get stung, you know, it's maybe not as pleasant. But I find myself being stung on the fingers is the worst because there's not a lot of space when it swells, you know, and it's really far away from the heart. The further away from the heart you get, the harder it is if your circulatory system is not in good shape. It takes longer for that venom to be broken down. Oh, by the way, while I'm thinking of it, I'm trying to think of everything I didn't say. If somebody is on beta blockers and they're getting stung, there's no contraindication that they can't be on beta blockers. The problem is if they go into anaphylactic shock, the EpiPen will not work for someone who's on a beta blocker. So you really want to check if you're going to be stinging other people and they've never been stung before and they're not a beekeeper, you know, and they're on beta blockers, and if they have an allergic reaction and you've got your EpiPen there, it's not going to work on someone who's on a beta blocker. Pacemakers are fine. It's those, I don't know what it is, the beta blocker, there's something about the beta blocker that prevents the EpiPen from working. So you might be in trouble. But, I mean, I've done over 50,000 treatments. I've never had anybody go into anaphylactic shock. It seems to me that the people who need this treatment and are coming to me are not allergic. So I've been very lucky that way. But I'm just trying to think of everything I can. The vitamin C is very important. No alcohol. Don't wipe the skin with alcohol. You know, if you want to clean off the skin, if the part of the skin that you want to sting the person might be a little dirty or something, or you think you want to be thorough and you want to, don't use alcohol, please. It's just, you're going to sting that person and you're just going to nullify it with that alcohol. It's just not a good mix. Alcohol and bee venom, just, they cancel each other out and they don't mix. And there's more, I mean, if you're just putting it on the skin to wipe the skin, they're not going to go into anaphylactic shock. But the only time that Charlie said he was really scared and he almost used an EpiPen, but he didn't, was when a man came who had too much to drink, and he came and got stung on his shoulder, and he kind of didn't feel so good, and Charlie almost used his EpiPen. So Charlie just recommended that you just not have alcohol 24 hours before or after, you know, drink alcohol, an alcoholic beverage, 24 hours before or after getting stung. But if you're going to use alcohol on the skin to clean the area, I wouldn't recommend it, you know, because, you know, bee stings hurt. And if the person, you know, you're having trouble getting the person to come and keep coming back, you don't want to nullify what you're doing. So very often I will have, you know, the calls that I get are the people calling me. Sometimes they want to know, where do I sting? But the other calls I get are, I've been stinging for 6 months. How come it's not working? And I say, how much vitamin C are you taking? And they say, what do you mean? Well, I just have an orange once a day. And I say, that's not enough. One orange is like maybe 80 milligrams. You need 3,000 milligrams. So the biggest mistake is not enough vitamin C. The next one is that that people are wiping the skin with alcohol and then nullifying it you know, it is just sort of canceling out the bee venom. And then the person's going through all that stinging and all the pain and all the itching and all that, and then they're not getting the benefit because you just swab the area with the alcohol. So thanks for bringing up the scars, because it just reminded me, you know, and I probably should put on my glasses and just look, because I've been going totally stream of consciousness and not, like, looking at my notes to remind myself if there was something that was, like, super important. But the main thing is that you wanna sting a problem that's chronic so you can elevate it to being acute. You want to make sure that your EpiPen is current. They run out after 2 years, although my doctor tells me that, you know, you can, you know, use them longer than that. But if you're stinging somebody else and they look and they see your EpiPen has expired, or you're doing a class, if I'm doing a class, you know, I show all my expired EpiPens. But if I'm stinging people, I want to make sure that I have an EpiPen that's not expired, because if something goes wrong, you know, I mean, I've never been sued, but, you know, I don't want to be sued. So I want to make sure that if I'm teaching, that I'm teaching every single person to do the vitamin C, whether you're stinging yourself or somebody else, and have that EpiPen. You stay on the torso of the body for the first month. Let's see here if there's anything else I left out except for the scars. So,
Now, there's one thing as a beekeeper that I've noticed, that when the bees are confined, such as our winter, the venom is much stronger than it is when they're free flight in better weather.
Yeah, that's probably.
Is there a difference in the stings?
Yeah.
If the venom is
stronger. Now, interestingly enough, Africanized bees, you know, who everybody's so afraid of the Africanized bees, they're smaller. I don't know if you've ever, those of you out there have seen, compared the difference in the size. They're actually a little bit smaller than most, you know, bees that beekeepers keep here in America. And their venom isn't any stronger. It's just that they're more aggressive. But, you know, some people have told me that the bees that have been out flying for a while and they're, like, on their last leg, so to speak, and, you know, because bees don't live that long during the season. You know, they die anyway.
Mm-hmm.
After a certain amount of flying, they just kind of burn themselves out. And, you know, they will eventually die on their own. They don't live forever.
No.
But,
6 to 8 weeks maximum,
yeah,
I guess.
Right, you know. So I've heard rumors, and I don't know if it's true, because sometimes, you know, you can paint the queen, but I haven't heard of people, like, painting some of the worker bees so we know, like, how old they are or something. But I have heard that the older they are, sort of the more they've been flying, that sort of the weaker they are, perhaps the venom might be, you know, a little bit weaker. But I'm not sure if that's really true or not.
All I know is when the spring of the first few springs, bees when they're first out,
yeah,
it seems that the sting is very, very strong, and then
very, very potent.
Yes.
Yeah. Almost,
and then,
like,
then as time goes on, it lessens.
Yeah.
Or maybe my reaction to it also.
Well, I think, yeah, true, because if you're not getting stung very much and then all of a sudden you get stung in March or something like that, or April, you know, it's like you haven't been stung for 3 months maybe, and then it feels like, you know, like, wow, it real zap, like electric or something.
Yeah.
And then maybe later in the summer you're sort of used to it. But I think it makes sense that, you know, the energy in the bee sort of disperses the longer they're alive and the more they've been flying. And they're going to be, you know, like us as we get older, we get tired more easily. We get out of breath. We, you know.
We're out.
Yeah, we sort of burn out, you know. And so that's why we have to sleep at night, so we can rejuvenate ourselves. And maybe bees, you know, don't have that much opportunity because they're flying so much and collecting the, you know, the nectar. And they're doing their work and bringing back the pollen and everything back to the hive and all. You know, they're doing all that work, and eventually they just burn out,
yeah,
you know, and they don't live as long as human beings live. You know, I mean, the queen obviously can live a lot longer, but, you know, the worker bees are, the queen's in the hive most of the time, you know. She's not out there flying around, you know, except for the honeymoon flight in a swarm or something. But, you know, basically the queen's not that she's not working hard. I don't mean to say that she doesn't have hard work, but it's not the same thing as flapping your wings 11,000 times a minute and flying, you know, all those miles back and forth just to get a tablespoon of honey, you know. I mean, it's like you guys know, you know, how long it takes for them to make that honey and how many times they have to fly out there, you know, and people really don't, most people don't really know the story of the bees. And that story really needs to be told. And if you haven't read the book yet, I highly recommend A Spring Without Bees. It is, it'll blow you away with all the pesticides and what they've learned in Europe.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Now, we were talking about different diseases.
Yeah.
Is there a acupuncture point or apiculture point, however you want to phrase it, for diabetics?
Well, diabetes in Chinese medicine goes with the pancreas. And in Western medicine goes with the pancreas.
Right.
But we don't call it the pancreas. We call it the pancreas and the spleen we put together. So that's part of the earth element, and that's sort of mothering, so nurturing and sort of caretaking. So diabetes has a lot to do with the stomach and the spleen meridians. And so that might be something you want, if you have a pencil, you might want to just jot down. But I don't know, do you personally have diabetes, or do you know somebody
who
does?
Well,
Or maybe you don't want to talk about it, and that's okay, too.
Well, no, the problem was, of course, I was overweight.
Uh-huh.
It's now under control because I've lost a lot of weight.
Right.
You know, you have to look at everything. There's two sides to every coin.
Yeah.
The kidney stones stopped the liver from working, which slowed my eating down, which caused me to lose weight, which stopped the diabetes.
That's right.
It doesn't really go away, but it arrested it or
and it
brought it under control, however you want to say it.
It makes sense to me because the diabetes element, the earth element, controls the kidney stones. It's the diabetes is the grandmother of the kidney stones.
Uh-huh.
The kidney stones is the mother of the liver and whatever liver problems there are, and the liver is the grandmother of the diabetes. So there's a cycle there, and
yeah.
I see it's that grandmother cycle. So you've got a couple of grandmother cycles going on. You've got the diabetes, and then the kidney stones is one grandmother to grandchild cycle, and then you've got the liver going to the diabetes is another grandmother cycle, but the kidney one to the liver is mother to child. So you have a number of different cycles going on there, and it makes what you're saying definitely makes sense. And I think that you already had a good response to acupuncture, so I think you're going to have, if you actually sting in the acupuncture points and you're really conscious and you really read the material, digest it, and say, I want to work on my diabetes today, you know, or I want to work on my kidney stones today, and you purposely sting, like Charlie did. He purposely stung on his knee, on purpose, not an accidental sting here or there, but he was, by hook or crook, he was going to make a difference. So if you say, I really want to get control of my kidney stones or my liver, and you sting on the pathways, and you look at the names of the points, like, for example, on the liver pathway, one of the points is called Gate of Hope. So if you want some hope in your life, you're going to choose that point. It's on a liver pathway. It's going to help your liver, but you're picking it because you feel like you need some hope. But you're actually using the name of the point. So you're treating by what we call the spirit of the points. And I have another book that I wrote that Rob and Mickey don't have. It's called Penetrating Heaven, and it has all the names of the points. And but, you know, there's quite a bit of that in the first book, too. But you can actually treat by the names of the points. But you can actually, let's say you want to start a new chapter in your life, and that's liver 13. But it also, so that'll help the liver, but it also is an alarm point or a point that when it's sore indicates that you might have diabetes problems. So if you did liver 13, not only would you start a new chapter in your life, but you'd also be helping the diabetes and the spleen.
Hmm.
So all of this is in my book, you know, or in my two books. So, but it's, you know, it's like once you start to really read and delve into it, you can actually figure out where you want to sting by yourself based on the names of the points, or knowing I want to work on my kidney stones. Let me look at the kidney pathway. Let's see. The name of this point, that sounds kind of interesting. I think I'll sting that point, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or you can call me and you can say, I really want to work on my kidney. Which point do you think would be best? And I might say, well, we're not in the winter right now, so let's sting at the kidney time of day. At least you do a kidney point, a water point on a water pathway in the right time of day. You're going to get more from it than if you just sting that exact same point in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you just have to be aware, if we're in daylight savings, you have to subtract an hour. But in
right.
the book, it'll show you the Chinese clock. So there's a time of day for each of the meridians. It'll show you the mother and child cycle. And it'll show you the grandmother and the grandchild cycle. So there's
sounds to me as if the book is a very good investment.
Yeah, I think it would be a very good,
very
investment.
Good investment.
Yeah. And you certainly can email me about it. And, you know, I mean, I know Rob said that I could promote my book on this, but it's I just want to promote the information because it's clearly, it's like I can't be in a million places at one time. So if you get the book and then you can help yourself, then it's like I've cloned myself and now you've got me in your pocket anytime you want it, even if my phone line's busy, you can look in the book and you have me. You still have me in your pocket. And
well,
one person said to me that they kept my book by their bed. It was like their Bible.
One of the things
like
you're going to find out about this forum is that the people that participate in it, almost every one of them is here for education, either to educate or to get educated.
Right.
And they all share this knowledge very freely.
Mm-hmm.
And Rob has put together one heck of a group.
Wow. Wow.
So
that's amazing.
We welcome you with open arms.
Oh, wow. That's fabulous. Now I really feel like I'm...
I know I'm
like
speaking for everybody.
Well, I have this little... I've written a poem about the earth element, which is sort of about the diabetes in it. And it talks about, you know, I am your Ellis Island. I am your Statue of Liberty. And it's like I feel like you just welcomed me. You know, like my grandparents came here from Europe and they were immigrants, you know. And it's like now I feel like you've welcomed me into your community, you know. And I do feel very welcome. And I'm, you know, I'm happy to do this again. And people can, you know, if you want, you can stack up a whole bunch of questions. People can email me bunches of questions, and then, you know, I can either answer them and just send them out to the whole group, or we could do another podcast and, you know, podcast, and I could just go through all the questions that we haven't talked about tonight and just answer them one by one. Just go down the list and just...
Well, we need to speak to Rob and Rob Overton about that. They set up the shows.
Okay, so, I mean, I'm totally open to doing this again. And, you know, clearly, you know, we kind of got you excited. But once you get out there and start, you know, doing the stinging, that's when the questions start coming up again. And so that's why I want to be available, you know, for more questions.
I don't know of any beekeeper that has ever done a presentation, whether it be for a club or a sales presentation, that has not been queried about this subject.
Yeah, it's, and, you know, people hear about it and they kind of wonder, is it too good to be true? And actually, I was kind of thinking when I first was exposed to it and I was on the drive down to the place where my friend who had MS was getting stung. And the whole way down, because I had a 45-minute drive with her and her husband, and I was thinking, well, this is too good to be true. And, you know, are they going to burn out their adrenal glands? And I was, you know, cautiously optimistic, but I was skeptical. And actually, it's a good thing to be skeptical, because then when you become a real believer, you can say at one time you were skeptical.
Yes.
You know? And I think it really does help. And I think that particular night, and I'm not sure if it was you, Rob, or not, but somebody did tell me that when I spoke in Middletown that time at Cornell Extension, that some people there were a little skeptical. And then when that fellow spoke up about his cancer, they really took notice, because then it wasn't me trying to, you know, because here I have a book and, you know, it looks like I'm trying to sell something, when really the truth is it's just I want to pass on the knowledge and I just have to go to Kinko's. And, you know, actually, James Alton Thomas, the president of that club, said to me that at some point maybe we could find a way to do another printing of the book, because what I'm doing now is so expensive. It's like, and we could maybe bring the cost down of the book, because I'm going to Staples or Kinko's and printing 25 copies at a time and binding them spiral bound. And that's really expensive. So, but I would just have to, you know, we'd have to make enough copies mm-hmm. and know that we could sell them to bring the cost down. But, I mean, that was one of his little projects that he came up with. But right now it's just like, you know, I have it on a CD-ROM and I bring it to Kinko's or Staples and they make me 25 copies. And if I make 50 copies, I bring the price down a little bit, but then I'm laying out all this money, you know, for it myself.
Mm-hmm.
But the goal is really, you know, to have one of these books in every beekeeping club in the world, because then people just could borrow the book, you know. And I mean, I don't care if they Xerox it. I really don't. I just want the information to get out there. I just assume have it be in every library and in every beekeeping, have one, you know, real copy, so that it's a good quality copy, so when you Xerox that the pictures come out good, you
mm-hmm.
know. But in the updated version, I have animal acupuncture, so horses and dog, all the points for horses and dogs as well as humans. But I don't care. Once you get a good copy, and then if people want to Xerox it, as far as I'm concerned, I don't care about that. I don't care about, you know, and I've even had trouble myself trying to bring it someplace. And they'll say, oh, this is copyrighted material. I say, yeah, but I'm the author. And I want to make copies of my own book. And sometimes they won't do it. So I've had some trouble with that. But, you know, if you have a copier, and you can make copies, I don't mind if a beekeeping club gets one copy and then decides to make copies for everybody in that club. I don't care, because I want everybody to have – I'd rather have everybody have the information, you know, because when I'm gone, you know, I'm not here anymore to answer the questions. So, you know, and questions do come up after you've done it for a while. You know, you get scared or you get confused or – what did you say? What was that about the diabetes now? Like, it sounded really good when you said it, and I thought I understood, but, you know, I don't understand why am I stinging the back of my knee at this time of day? You know, that's when it comes in handy to have that part mm-hmm. of the Chinese clock to see, so that if I'm not here, you can just look to see you're having the same problem at 3 o'clock every afternoon. Your back hurts. That means that you need to do something called the entry-exit treatment on that meridian. So if you're having a problem at 3 o'clock and you're tired at 3 o'clock and you have to take a nap and then you wake up at 5 and you have tons of energy, that means you have an entry-exit clock on the meridian that starts at 3 o'clock. And so that's explained in the book as well. So you would do the exit point on the meridian right before it and the entry point. So it's sort of like a highway. You know, we have exits. You get off to go to Syracuse, or you go to Rome, New York, or Amsterdam, or Utica or something, or Kingston. You know, I mean, you have exits and entrances on a highway, and you have the same things on acupuncture meridians. You have an entry point where the energy comes in at that time of day, and at a certain time of day, the energy is now going to another meridian. So if somebody is having a problem, I don't care what it is, whether it's elbow pain or a toothache or they feel tired or back pain or, you know, they're thirsty. If somebody's having a problem at the same time every day, it always means they have an entry-exit problem. You look at the Chinese clock in my book or in some acupuncture book, and you look to see what meridian is at its peak at that time of day. Now, there's also going to be another meridian, the flip side of it, that's going to be at its weakest at that time of day. So, for example, the lungs are at their weakest from 3 o'clock in the afternoon till 5 o'clock in the afternoon, but the bladder is at its strongest at that time of day. I'm not expecting you to remember all this, but it's in the book, so you could just look it up. But at 3 o'clock in the morning, the lung is going to be at its strongest point in the day, and the bladder is going to be at its weakest. So you have partners there. So when something's very strong, something else is very weak. And so you might want to look at that. But when people say they wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and they can't fall back asleep, that really means something in Chinese medicine. And now, even though you're not an acupuncturist, you're going to be able to sting somebody with a bee, you know, on that meridian that has to do with that time of day. So you're going to have enough information. And if I get everybody's, if everybody on this call sends me an email, goes to my website and sends me an email and says, oh, I was the one whose fiance, you know, had the appendix problem, or I was the one that had the, you know, liver problem or the kidney stones or something. You can identify yourself or not. You can just say, I was on the call. I will send you a 10-page little, it's not really a, it's kind of a questionnaire. It's very much in depth, and it's in the back of my book. But I can get it to you very quickly, overnight. If you just send me your email address, I can send it out to everybody who's on this call, just a group email. And or if Rob or one of the other people, if you already have each other's email addresses, I can send one of you this thing and you can forward it to everybody. But it's a 10-page, and I just made it up for a workshop I'm doing on acupuncture, but it's a 10-page series of questions for every single element, meaning earth, fire, air, water, and wood, you know, the five elements, and every meridian, so the one that's for the diabetes, you know, the pancreas or the spleen, the stomach meridian, the liver, the kidney, so you can see the names of the organs, and it asks questions. And so by printing out this 10-page questionnaire, you can maybe keep one copy pristine and make another copy for yourself and just start circling. Circling or highlight where your problems are or where you're strong. And you can, you know, make copies and give it out to other people and see where people are struggling and strong. You'll know exactly where to sting yourself. And if you have, then you have the pictures, any acupuncture book, it doesn't have to be mine, but if you have any acupuncture book and you know you want to sting yourself on the spleen, you just look to see where the spleen meridian is, and you could sting along that meridian. Just remember, the first month, if you're not a beekeeper, you stay on the torso of the body, so you would look for points that are on, you know, the trunk of the body, either the front of the body or by the spine. But after the first month, you can go down the arms and legs, and you start from the top and go down. So you don't go to the toes right away. I'd rather you go to the thighs and then work your way down. But basically, you know, once you kind of get the hang of it and you know which meridian you want to work on, then you can look at the names of the points, or you can just sting for the right time of day. And if you want to sting on an earth meridian, like the stomach and spleen are earth, then you pick the earth point on that, and you sting at the right time of day. And it'll tell you that in the book. And then you've got you're basically your own acupuncturist, but you're using a bee instead of a needle. And you can actually, if you don't want to use the needles or the bees, you can do acupressure on those points. If you've got somebody and you want to try to help them and they're afraid of the bees, you can use this book to do acupressure. It doesn't have to be about the bees, but the bees are just so much more powerful than the needles and the you know, pressure points. So, you know, it's really what that person is willing to do. If they're desperate enough, they'll go for the bees. If they're not so desperate, maybe they'll try the acupressure, but it's sort of not going to be as powerful as the bees and not going to be as powerful as the needles. But I personally think that the bee stings are much more powerful than the acupuncture needles. And if I have somebody who's not responding to acupuncture, I bring out the bees, you know, even if I have to get them by mail in the middle of the winter, because I don't want someone to have to get their spleen taken out, you know, or to have a knee operation just because, you know, it's the winter and I don't have bees right now. So I'll order them by mail, and they might cost me $25, and I'll get 60 bees.
You don't keep a winter hive?
Right now, I don't have a hive. I moved to Woodstock, and we're on a mountain, and we've got bear, and we haven't figured out how to keep the bear out. So we haven't solved that problem yet. But maybe Rob or somebody up here can help me with that. So far, we haven't figured out how to have a hive without.
Look, the fence with some bacon hung on it.
Yeah, I'm going to get you set up this year.
Oh, really? Okay, I would really love that because then I wouldn't have to order bees by mail and then I wouldn't have to bother you in the winter. And actually, if we can get me a hive that has one of those little holes in one of the hive body parts, you know, one of the little drawers there, then I can get bees out in the middle of the winter without opening the hive because they'll just come right out of that hole. And Charlie used to make sure, if you look at my book, all the illustrations that have hives in them, they have one of the, you know, one of the bee boxes has a little hole in it, usually the middle box there has that hole. If you've got, you know, like three boxes on top of each other, that middle one usually has that hole. And that's where I used to get the bees out in the winter. But, yeah, if you can help set me up and help me figure out how to do it without, you know, the bears, because I just know so many people have had problems with bears.
Yeah.
On the mountain. And
I got it figured out. I've had four bear in my yard, and they haven't touched the hive, and
really?
They tore my chicken coop half apart trying to get in. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, God. Well, you know.
And when are we having bear stew?
Yeah.
Well, we're going to have a real party at some point here. We're all going to get together and see what each other looks like. So, but if you go on my website, there's a picture of me, so you'll kind of see what I look like. But, I'm happy to, if there's still more questions, I'm happy to keep going because I could, you know, as you can tell, it's a labor of love. I mean, I really love this work, and I want to pass it on. And, there are people that need the information. And it's great if you can sting where it hurts, and that's a good beginning. But, wow, if you can add the acupuncture component of it, and if you can understand, you know, the meridians, and this little 10-page questionnaire that I'll send you out, you can get overnight because it'll be an email. It's an attachment. And you can get it just overnight. As soon as they get your email address, you can just get it right away and you start circling, you know, where you're struggling, and it'll ask questions like, do you crave sweets? Do you like salty foods? Do you like sour foods? What's your favorite season? What's your worst season? And it has questions that sound like, what does this have to do with anything? But it means something in Chinese medicine. All you have to do is look up and you'll see, in general, the earth element questions that are sort of generic, like anybody who craves sweets, you know, it's the earth element. Anybody who craves salts, it's the water element. Anybody who craves spicy foods, it's the metal element. But the metal element involves two meridians, and it's the lungs and the large intestine. So people who have lung and large intestine problems, either they love spicy foods or they hate spicy foods, but they have an issue with spicy foods. They have an issue with their father. They have an issue with loss. They have an issue with the fall. There are things that go with each meridian. And once you look at this questionnaire, and it's not something you even have to share with anybody, you just do it for yourself, you can figure out where you need to sting yourself, which pathways, and why. Because, and it'll tell you the times of day. So you'll, you know, if I can get everybody to send me, go on my website, foreveramberrose.com, click at the bottom and just send me an email. I will send you this little questionnaire thing, and you'll have it by tomorrow morning or the next day, and you will be able to see which before you even get my book, you'll be able to see if you were going to sting yourself where you want to do it, and you're going to be the captain of your own ship. You, at some point, you might not even need me. You might have it figured out. You might just ask me a question every once in a while. You might not be calling every day, you know? Because now you know where you want to sting yourself. You're going to say, I know what, this week I'm going to work on the spleen. Then next week I'm going to work on the kidneys because that's the grandchild. And then I'm going to go to the liver, and then I'm going to go to the spleen again, because you're going to come up with a system in your mind of what you want to do because you know your body better than I do. You know your story better than I do. And you know your friends better than I do, the people that you want to help. The people who were asking about the guy with the back pain and the appendix and those kinds of things. Those, the people that you know and love, you know them better than I do. You can, if you make one copy of this questionnaire, or you can print it and circle it, and if you like it, then you can because you'll have it as an email attachment. You'll save it. You can make as many copies as you want, and you can give it out to your friends, and then when you sting them or they sting themselves, they'll know. They'll come to you and they'll say, I think I need a little bit on the liver right now, or I need Gate of Hope, you know, or something like that.
Amber?
Yeah.
If you could send that to me, and with your permission, I can make it that it's downloadable with the recording of this podcast so people can get it.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Okay.
Absolutely. So, and that's Rob Overton?
Yes.
Who I'm talking to? Okay. All right. So what I'll do is it's a 10-page email attachment, and it's called the 5-element questionnaire, and it'll go through each of the elements one at a time. And it'll start with each of their 12 meridians, and it'll say, this is the heart, and it'll have the questions for the heart. And basically, people can circle or highlight where they're struggling, where they're, you know, having trouble. And if you think that you can't make it, if you feel like you're everything, if you feel like every single meridian is out of balance, I'll tell you now, the secret is always the heart. When the heart is affected, the heart is like a conductor of an orchestra. And if that conductor is not on the podium, that orchestra does not play. That orchestra will not play unless the conductor is there, and he's got to have his baton, and he's got to wave it for them to play, and they've got to have the music there. So he makes sure all that happens. So if you see yourself in every single meridian, and you say, I can't figure this out, I'm all over the place. I'm in every element. I'm fire, I'm earth, I'm water, I'm wood, I'm metal, you know, or I'm in every meridian, then it's always the heart, because the heart is the supreme controller. And so then you really want to sting on the heart. Now, if you've had some heart surgery and you have a scar, I'd probably start there. But, you know, I'll send you what I have. I have a little attachment that has some of those just ideas of treating by the spirit of the point so people can get the flavor of it. They won't have the book, so they won't see where the picture is of where the meridian is. But you could look, you could go on Google and probably Google Google acupuncture and acupuncture chart or something. And you could, you know, before you get the book, if you're curious to see where the meridians are, you could type in the spleen meridian in acupuncture, and it probably would pop up with a picture of it. You know, if you've got the internet, you've got the world at your fingertips, and you can probably type Google anything in there, you know, and it'll come up and you'll see exactly where that meridian is, even without my book. But you won't know the names of the points. So that's the important part. And you won't have the questions. You won't know exactly which unless you know you have liver trouble or kidney trouble or diabetes, you know, you won't know exactly which meridian to go to. So these questions will show you on an emotional and spiritual level, not just physical. And it'll tell you the times of day, too. So you'll get everybody who's on this call right now or who's on your list will get that all the times of day. And just remember, starting Sunday, you just have to subtract an hour because we're in daylight savings.
I'm going to have to leave for a while.
All right. Well,
yeah,
I'm happy to come back.
We're about an hour over the show now, so we'll wrap it up.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
But
I said, I could go on forever, really.
We're going to give you a chance to do this again.
Please, please do, because it does my heart good. It makes me feel like I'm helping people. And there's nothing like being stuck on a mountain in a house with a lot of snow, not being able to get out, and feel like you're a bump on a log and you're not doing enough to save the world, you know. And if I can make a difference in one person's life, you know, tonight, if I help one person tonight, then that's all I need to know.
Yeah, we'll probably add you as a second beekeeping podcast when you're ready next time for a month.
I'm ready whenever you guys are, and maybe when some people have had a chance to listen, maybe some people have tried it, maybe people can email me questions in advance, too, you know, if they want to. You know, the lecture that I actually gave in Middletown, I have it as an outline. And what I think I might do is maybe I'll send you a few separate emails with some different things, and you can choose to pass some of those things on. But basically, you know, the way I started out with there's a ride in Disney World where Dr. Schwenk, you know, I have my whole lecture as an outline kind of. And I can email that as an attachment as well. So that
will I be able to post that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't see why not. You can post my whole book.
That's not good for you.
No, we don't want to do that.
All right, well,
we respect that. We want to take your income.
Yeah, my son calls me Mama Teresa because I just give everything away for free. But, you know, just post whatever. I'll send you some things, and if it looks interesting and if you think people would like it, you have my permission right now to post anything I send you.
Well, I'm going to give you some tools. We'll talk about it tomorrow or the next day, whatever.
Okay.
One, I don't care if you got a 24-hour class. I can put it on the Internet for you.
Really? Wow.
So if you got the videos and you don't know what to do with them, just tell Rob, you know, to get a hold of the other Rob.
Okay.
And we'll set that up. We did a 3-hour conference last May. I had no problem putting it up at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, if we can I do things on Skype or Rob?
You could have done this on Skype.
We could have, yeah. But also the other thing is Rob Overton or anybody who lives close to me in Woodstock, Mickey or something, do we know anybody who's got a video camera who can record my the next time I give a talk or something and I'm doing a demonstration? Because the best thing is to, you know, it's not just to see me talking, but to actually watch me working.
Yes.
You know, and seeing where the meridians are. So if we know anybody in any of the B clubs who has a video recorder and who can actually videotape me, we can put that on the web.
I can probably handle that.
Okay.
Yeah, we can probably put all your little classes, you can break them up into little videos.
All right.
You can
that
do as many
great.
Audios as you want.
Oh, that's great.
I'm going to give you some writing tools that allow you to worry about writing and not the Internet.
Okay.
And you will be able to take it as far as you want to. You'll have one hell of an audience if you want to put it together.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
The world.
Really,
yeah, because this is information that we don't want to lose, and it was passed down from Charlie, and those of us who have it keep wanting.
Do you have a picture of Charlie?
Gosh, I've had quite a few over the years. I'm not sure. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I do. Actually, I have one downstairs, and it's laminated. We just bought a scanner. I'm not sure if I can scan it in, but
I was going to say, I'm probably thinking about doing a short story about Charlie who, you know, with your story of passing it on.
Yeah,
this is the man who taught me.
I have a picture of Charlie in color that was laminated, and it's a whole article about him. And so it's from a newspaper, and I have
that'll
it downstairs.
Work.
And if we, you know, I mean, I don't know if there are copyright problems, but probably we could just.
How old is it?
Oh, gosh. It's got to be over 10 years old, that.
I think we're okay.
That article. Yeah.
I bet you the newspaper doesn't even know where that article is.
Yeah, I'm sure not. But I laminated it because I didn't want it to fade.
Right.
You know, and but it's probably the only real color. I mean, I might have around, and I have slides of my whole trip to China and me stinging people with bees and Charlie stinging people with bees. That's something we can't even duplicate now because he's not even alive. But I have slides.
Yeah.
And if we could put the slides into another format.
There is some equipment that allows you to convert 35mm slides to digital, but I do
okay.
not have it.
All
in
right.
fact,
but
I haven't
mean, I
even seen anybody
slides.
Trying to use it in 10 years.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I have material that's from my trip to China, a lot of slides, and I have all kinds of, I saved a lot of articles about Charlie. And I have lots of stuff. There was a magazine called Be Well, AP Mondia, if you know about that. They have all kinds of books. AP Mondia had, you know, all kinds of, when people spoke it, you know, at some of these conferences around the world. I think they do it every 2 years or something. Have it in different countries. But I went to the one in China. But, I mean, I can send you, I can email you at some point. Now, I won't overload you.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
is your phone number
have
on your website?
No.
Okay, so I'll email you, tell you who I am, give you my phone number. You can call me at your leisure.
Okay, that's fine. That's one of
I'm always around most of the time, at least. I mean, most of the time I do Internet things like you're doing today.
You're the one who's in Florida then?
I'm the one in Florida.
Okay.
And I own a domain hosting company. I mean, that's all
really?
I do is internet, yeah.
Ah.
And I'm
wow.
The Wildlife Pro Network is because of my connection to the wildlife control industry. I like to get out there and do it a lot more often, but I've been pretty busy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well,
and that's my connection to Bob Evans, Robert Evans. And
okay.
Robert started these beekeeping podcasts
wow.
for me, what, a year and a half ago or so, Bob?
I think he may have said
yeah,
that.
He might have, yeah.
Yeah.
And, well, I appreciate you joining us, and I will send you an email tomorrow. And
oh, how awesome.
You can follow it up with a phone call, and you tell me what you need. I mean,
okay.
if it's internet-wise, I can hand you whatever you need.
Okay. Well, that's totally
and make
totally
it real
awesome.
Easy for you to communicate with the world.
Really?
Yeah.
That would be great, because I see all these other people who are doing these, you know, classes and all online. And, you know, I don't really have... I mean, I have Skype now that I'm a, you know, and I have a pretty good computer, but I'm not that great on it. So, but I mean, if we can create things and then people can watch it.
You can create anything in text or with pictures or with video and audio, and I can help you.
Okay. That sounds great. All right. Well, thank you all so much. Whoever's still left, it was a labor of love for 3 hours.
Quite a few.
3 hours of Amber
thank
Rose.
yeah.
And you just made my whole day. You
well,
really did.
Thank you, Dr. Ambrose.
Yeah.
I sure enjoyed the podcast.
Oh,
I sure did, too.
By the way, the patron saint I found out of beekeeping is Saint Ambrose. That's about as close as you can get to Amber Rose. And I chose my name. My first name wasn't Amber to begin with, so I guess I was meant to do this work. I kind of lived into my name.
I guess so.
Saint
absolutely.
Ambrose. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
All right. Well, thanks for everybody for being here for me and asking great questions.
You were here for us.
Okay, well, I will continue to be here as long as I will die with my boots on and with my with my stinging people with bees because I love it so much. So we just got to keep the bees alive.
Dr. Ambrose.
Okay, thanks, everybody.
All right, thank you. God bless everybody.
Thank you very much, Dr. Ambrose.
All right, be
thanks.
Well. Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Good night.
Bye.
Going to post show.
Hey, that was pretty interesting.
It was awesome.